On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Way through the week, and I find it difficult to conceive of that. The nights fly by. Welcome along. We are halfway through this this mid-February week, and I got to tell you, it's a little bit weird. I'm not used to thunderstorms in mid-February in West Virginia in the mountains in the dead of winter. It's acting like, you know, mid-March out there right now. Oh, well, Cole keeps the lights on. What are you going to do? Nah, it's so weird around here. I heard a thunder peal about an hour ago, shortly before Mark Levine's program started. And, it's an indication of just how weird things get. I wasn't sure if that was a blast on the mountaintop or a natural peal of thunder. That's what happens when you live in a war zone brought to you by coal. Or any other war zone, I suppose. And it just created this unsettling sensation. But it is Wednesday. It is not just the middle of the week. It's not just hump day. Not just downhill to Friday. No, brothers and sisters! It is that most special day of the week. That's right. The doors of the Cathedral of Common Sense are swinging open. Look inside and see all the congregants. Look down the blood-red carpet, and here stand I, Archbishop Bob Kincaid, ready to lead the Liturgy of Logic. Choirmaster, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah!
Hallelujah!
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Oh, glory! Come on down the blood-red carpet, brethren and sistren, and lay your hands upon the subwoofers. Feel the healing rays of common sense flowing through you. Hallelujah. It is prayer meeting Wednesday. What better time, what better use might you make of your time than this? I love you. Yes. So let's cut right to the chase. Apparently, they started prayer meeting early up in Toledo, Ohio. This kindly provided to me by our buddy David in Tennessee. Dateline yesterday, ripped from the pages of today's headlines. It's prayer meeting Wednesday. Headline: police say man held woman captive, read Bible. A man held a woman captive in handcuffs and an adult diaper for 3 days while he read Bible passages to her. Troy Brisport, 34 years old, has been charged with kidnapping and felonious assault. His bail was set yesterday at $400,000. He was cruising up in Detroit, apparently. Troy Brisport, 34 years old. On a Wednesday night, see, that's why you want to be at prayer meeting. If you're sitting there with your hands on the subwoofer at prayer meeting, you got a lot less chance of running into Troy Brisport. This sad woman, however, told Troy Brisport she had nowhere to stay, and he said, well, hop on in, sister. Drove her 55 miles south to Toledo. And after she fell asleep, glory, praise, after she fell asleep, Brisport handcuffed her wrists and ankles, gagged her, undressed her, and put her in an adult diaper, and then read Bible passages to her. What makes me think that this guy just has Assembly of God or Baptist or All Holiness Church, just written all over him. All of that, the handcuffs, the undressing, the belt diaper, the Bible passages, comes from Police Captain Ray Carroll. He also noted that, and only because this guy's a Christian, that she was not sexually assaulted. On the other hand, however, the downside is that he repeatedly tried to suffocate her using a pillow and a blanket. It's one of those Gandhi moments, isn't it? I like your Christ. I do not like your Christians. They are so unlike your Christ. Precisely. The woman finally escaped Saturday this past after Brisport fell asleep. Well, you know, that onslaught of Bible verse reading is, that'll wear you out after a while. When she was found, she had on only a t-shirt and the adult diaper and still had the handcuffs on. My God. See, not to put too fine a point on it, but this is what happens when you take a mentally ill person and you pump them full of 5,000-year-old mythology and tell them that it's fact. The end result is abject lunacy. And frankly, I would put it to you, and feel free to disagree if you wish, that there's not a dime's worth of difference between Troy Brisport, for instance, and, say, the legislature of the state of North Dakota. The North Dakota House of Representatives has this day specifically afforded a fertilized human egg the legal rights of a fully grown, matured human being. The vote was 51-41 to approve the piece of legislation. It now goes to the North Dakota Senate. And casts North Dakota, you know, a state just rolling in money, in the position of having to spend a fortune on litigation over something that essentially is not their business. The legislation was, of course, sponsored by a lunatic male. That's always the way it is. It's always a lunatic male. Meanwhile, in Oklahoma, a committee of their House yesterday approved legislation that would prohibit physicians from performing abortions solely on account of the gender of a woman's fetus. In other words, you couldn't do an abortion because mommy wanted a boy and the fetus was a girl, or vice versa. You know, at first blush, that seems almost reasonable. Until you get to the realization and the statement in the news story that notes that there's no evidence whatsoever that that has ever been done in the state of Oklahoma. At all. Even a little bit. Even once. Not even a case of someone saying, well, I don't want the baby and it's a boy. Or, this is not the right time for me to have a baby and it's a girl. Didn't happen. Didn't happen. But all the, you know, all the problems have been solved in Oklahoma. They have no homeless. Everyone has a living wage. Plenty of food to eat. Properly clothed. The SAT scores for high school students in Oklahoma are higher than anywhere else in the nation, and there sits the Oklahoma legislature bored to tears without any social ill to solve. Their budget is flush with money. Everybody's getting a free check from the state government of Oklahoma. Oklahoma is, in fact, a paradise blessed by God. Hallelujah! Praise! Except that none of that is true. Oklahoma has an incredibly high teen pregnancy rate. Oklahoma has terrible sexually transmitted disease problems. Oklahoma's school system languishes in ignorance. Poor people in Oklahoma are doomed. Oklahoma has people like Tom Coburn and Jim Inhofe for senators, and most of the rest of their congressional delegation is equally crazier than a sprayed roach. And so rather than do the people's bidding, they start making up stuff to make legislation for... Oh, Jesus. Our buddy Mara passed this along to me. It's simply astonishing. She notes, this is scary as hell that the wingnuts are so strong. But they're not. Not to be disagreeable, they're not. You can't get away with this stuff in any sort of sane or enlightened state. Only in the states where religious stupidity is ingrained in both culture and government. You see. The author of the bill in Oklahoma is a representative by the name of Dan Sullivan, another white guy. It's designed to stop couples from using the gender of a fetus as a reason to get an abortion. He said a doctor would be prohibited from performing an abortion if the mother specifically said the fetus's sex was the reason. Even this clown has to admit, however, like I said, that there's no evidence to support that it even happens. It's kind of like partial birth abortion. There is no such medical procedure, but we banned it! Ah, don't you feel better? Don't you feel all moral? Now you can just turn away and ignore all the homeless people, all the hungry children, you know, the children eating salmonella peanut butter and tainted half mad cow downer beef stew in the school. Nah, no, don't bother with that. We don't have any problems because the fetuses are people and they're safe people. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you. My Lord in heaven. Stunning, ain't it? This is America. Now, in the last several days, we've been talking rather extensively about the Fourth Circuit Court decision that opened the floodgates for hell and damnation to yawn wide in this, my state, West Virginia. I'm already seeing news stories that say things like, oh, where is it? That there are in excess of 90 valley fill permits pending now. Just immediately after that decision. That's the bad news. The good news is that Ashley Judd has come out four square against mountain removal. I don't call it mountaintop removal anymore because that makes it sound like, you know, popping a pimple or something. It's the removal of a mountain because when they're done, it's not a mountain anymore. It's something, but it ain't a mountain. It's a mess, but it ain't a mountain. Ashley Judd joined about 500 protesters at the Kentucky Capitol in Frankfort to rally in support of a bill that would eliminate mountain removal in that state. And Lord God, the news of that hit yesterday. We would have talked about it last night had I not had to go to the meeting and had the show not been foreshortened as a result. But news hit yesterday, and here in West Virginia, people went absolutely crazier than a sprayed roach. All the mine ladies and stuff. All these women who and husbands and why don't she just shut up? It's like listening to Brack on Space Ghost. Shut up! And she thinks she's something because she's pretty. Well, I don't need to be pretty. I'm proud of my man, and he's a coal miner. He works on that. Something's going to happen with these mountains either. They're just sitting there. She shut up. Pretty things from Hollywood. Maybe she'll pay my husband's salary. I personally think it's kind of cute. Because, among other things, you know, right-wingers, they get Charlie Daniels and Chuck Norris. We get Ashley Judd. Whoa! I'll take Ashley Judd over Chuck Norris, Charlie Daniels, any day of the week. But of course, it's being spun dirty here in this state. The headline in the Charleston Gazette said, "Actress Judd joins anti-mining protest." Bull! She joined a protest of mountain removal. And as we all know, mountain removal ain't mining. Oh, there's a lot of stuff to go into this evening, but I want to take you, lest you think that I'm glorying in the stupidity of places like the North Dakota legislature or the Oklahoma legislature. I'm not. We have our own problems here. Well, they've come here. They've come to the hills and hollers. They've come to the hills and hollers thanks to an organization called Campaign Secrets. Campaign Secrets is headquartered in Georgia. You know, meddlesome outsiders. If you're a right winger and you can, no, we're going to save them. This is missionary work. On the other hand, if somebody comes from, you know, over the line in Virginia to protest in West Virginia, meddling outsiders? What? They go home. How are we going to feed our babies if we ain't boiling up mountains? You know how it goes. So, Campaign Secrets of Georgia is apparently convinced that West Virginia is living a dream life where, again, like Oklahoma, all the children have above average SAT scores, everybody's got enough to eat, roof over their heads, clothing on their backs, adequate wages, good jobs, healthy existences. Because Campaign Secrets of Georgia has set up something called WV4Merge.com. WV4Merge.com. That's the numeral four, not the word, because they can't spell it. Or they get confused. Is it F-O-R-E, F-O-U-R, F-O-R? We'll just use the dang number. WV4Merge.com. And they're worried. Not about exploding mountains. Not about communities being poisoned with various and sundry toxic heavy metals in their water supply. Not about a mono economy that presents no hope for West Virginia's future whatsoever. Oh, no, WV4Marriage.com and Campaign Secrets. Well, they know where the real problems are, and you and I know, too, don't we? Mm-hmm. It's the queers. Sure enough. It makes the mountains ashamed to be mountains because West Virginia ain't protecting marriage enough. One man, one woe man. That's a marriage. God,
and he designed it perfectly for one man and one woman. A husband, a wife, a family. The building block of every community, every culture, every race, every nation. Governments have recognized and uniquely protected marriage for more than 2,000 years, so families can pass life to the next generation. In West Virginia, however...
Huh? Governments have recognized and protected marriage for more than 2,000 years? What? Just how is that? I mean, my ancient history classes were one of those that I didn't actually sleep through. I was paying attention because I get all geeky about that ancient history stuff. Governments have protected marriage as a man, between a man, one man and huh? Which government would that be? Would that be the Greek government that protected marriage as a union of one man and one woman while allowing older men to take on little boys and get them to do things that we won't talk about because it's the dinner hour right now? And little Timmy and little Susie might still be in the room. Would it be that government? Or would it be the Roman government, where, oh, I don't know, the Emperor Caligula, or was it Nero? Where's Eugene Finnerman when I need him? Kicked his pregnant sister to death that was pregnant by him? Yeah, right. Right on top of it.
There is currently no clear definition of marriage as only the union of one man and one woman.
You know, that would be all right if it weren't for the fact that they're a bunch of damn liars! I mean, we've got one of those stupid-ass laws in West Virginia. Marriage is a sacred union of one man and one woe, man! It's right there on the books. If these morons could read, they could have opened up the West Virginia Code and found it sitting there just as plain as what I just told it to you. But then again, it'd be a lot harder to take simple-minded fundies' money and support lavish right-wing lifestyles if they were actually in the truth-telling business.
Yet, marriage has a public status, and in most states is protected in law. Marriage between a man and a woman is held up as the ideal in all of civilized society.
All of civilized society, and I wish to goodness you could see this video. One of these days we gotta make this work. Yep, marriage is held up as the ideal in all of civilized society. It's a marriage between one white man and one white woman with little white children, one little white boy and one little white girl blowing little bubbles. It's all blowing bubbles. That's how happy they are in their union between one man and one woman. And it's just sitting around spending the rest of their days blowing bubbles.
Because of its profound stabilizing influence on our culture, as well as...
Yeah, yeah, the stabilizing influence. I mean, if you don't have marriage between one man and one woman, next thing you know, you're Troy Brisport picking up a woman in Detroit, putting her in an adult diaper and reading Bible verses to her. But why would I want to mention that?
Is the important economic benefits of strong and intact families. But today, that ideal is under an unrelenting attack, and same-sex marriage in West Virginia is a closer reality than you may think. 30 states have already passed constitutional amendments defining marriage, but activists outside our state are aggressively targeting the remaining 20, including...
Our state? Wouldn't our state be Georgia? Just saying. I mean, my state's West Virginia, but these clowns are from Georgia. Yeah, well, you know, they're right-wingers and truth ain't in them. I guess we'll just keep moving.
...in West Virginia, working tirelessly to redefine marriage away from God's design to favor the desires of adults over the needs of children for the naturally balanced model of a mother and a father.
Ah, naturally balanced. With electrolytes! I know our buddy Albert is in the chat room right now, so it's naturally balanced. It's what families crave. It has electrolytes. Albert is our official idiocracy ambassador. Yeah.
The push for same-sex marriage has produced an historical crisis for the church. Today, in courtrooms across the country, in decisions as recent as last month, our constitutional guarantee of religious liberty is going toe-to-toe with an aggressive social agenda. And religious liberty is losing.
In West Virginia? Really? I don't think there's 5 gay bars in the entire state. But marriage is under assault? I mean, I follow the legislature here pretty closely. I haven't even seen a marriage equality amendment or law or anything introduced. I know there are a couple of equality groups, and I laud them in their work, but... They're not exactly doing sit-down strikes in the legislature or anything, for heaven's sakes.
Judges in California, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and Connecticut have arbitrarily redefined marriage and religious freedom. And virtually every area of ministry is coming under legal attack, threatening our ability to freely and legally follow the faith. Church...
Which one? Just curious, which faith? I mean, I know they're showing me a little picture of the church in the Wildwood and everything, but which faith? Follow the faith. That's a definite article. This is, of course, America, where we have a multiplicity of faiths and no government favoritism for any one particular one, not even weirdo fundies who roll on the floor, handle snakes, speak in tongues, and drink strychnine. No, hell no.
Daycare. Faith-based marriage counseling.
Rick Goodner, white courtesy phone. Rick Goodner, white courtesy phone. Rick Goodner being, of course, our horn psychotherapist, has told us that on a number of occasions that in his business, which is psychotherapy, what he gets are people who have already been massively screwed up by so-called counselors in fundamentalist churches, utterly broken human beings who then wind up talking to him and trying to find out if life is worth living. That's your faith-based marriage counseling, but you know that.
Christian adoption agencies.
Oh, Christian adoption agencies. Now, just stop it. Christian adoption agencies. I'm sorry. No, you can't adopt this child. You're not white enough. You know how it works.
Religious schools. Christian businesses.
Religious schools. Oh, my God. You know, the ones where... America ain't great no more because we left Jesus behind when the Mexicans attacked us at Pearl Harbor. Yeah.
Doctors. Professionals. Parachurch ministries.
Parachurch? Parachurch ministries? Is that like paramilitary? I mean, are these people running around having like the church militia camps with M16s and stuff? Wow, that's scary. Fundamentalists with parachutes? I don't know what the hell that means.
Even the church, its clergy, and lay leadership.
Well, God knows there's no paucity of lay leadership in fundamentalist America. No, there's just not. I mean, Troy Brisport.
Each is a growing battleground for promoting same-sex unions against church teaching, even individual conscience, with the full weight of the law standing against the faithful. With alarming swiftness, these sweeping changes are moving from the courtroom to the classroom.
Oh, poor little blonde girl sitting there, looks like she's about fourth, fifth grade, prettiest thing you ever saw, and she's sitting there having to learn about the homos. You just know that's what that liberal, left wing, godless communist teacher, union members teacher, all about them homos. It's just sickening.
In many schools today, teachers are being ordered to stop using the words mother and father. Father's Day celebrations are not observed. And the very...
There's a war on Father's Day now? Oh, God! I thought it was bad enough with Christmas. I never thought they'd stoop to going after Father's Day. They'll probably be canceling the U.S. Open. I used to love to sit and watch that with the boy on Father's Day, and now I can't because there's a war on the homos got a war on Father's Day. Skipped right over Easter and went after Father's Day. Damn, they got some nerve.
The concept of motherhood is abandoned to political correctness. Across the country,
What? The concept of motherhood is abandoned to political correctness? Motherhood no longer requires a uterus? Missed the memo.
Preschool children are being taught to equate homosexuality with heterosexuality. And incredibly, a parent's right to object to this indoctrination is becoming legally impossible. In West Virginia, same-sex
nightmare for marriage in West Virginia.
The state and its churches into legal chaos. They know that what was done in California was never intended to stay in California. A weekend trip to San Francisco for a West Virginia same-sex couple, plus a pro bono ACLU attorney, could easily become a nightmare for marriage in West Virginia.
We must keep the homos off the aircraft. We need one of them West Bank walls all the way around West Virginia to keep them West Virginia homos right there in the hills, what's left of them. Same-sex couple plus jet plus ACLU attorney equals nightmare for West Virginia.
In fact, a currently pending same-sex adoption case here could effectively allow five unaccountable judges in Charleston to alter the biblical definition of marriage for all of West Virginia.
Dear Lord, and it happened right here in Fayette County, brethren and sister, and it did, right here in Fayette County. There was a perfectly good, upstanding, God-fearing, hallelujah, snake-handling judge, and he wouldn't let a pair of lesbians adopt a child. He done what the Lord told him to do and told them lesbians, get out of here, lesbians! That child can live in the gutter for all I care. It can live in foster care for the rest of its days, but it ain't gonna go home and have no decent home with you lesbians. Get out of here! And them lesbians, you know what them lesbians did? They appealed. They appealed that case and said, that judge ain't being politically correct enough for us. Because we just want to, us lesbian couples, we want to adopt all the children what ain't got mommies and daddies like they ought to, like is in the natural balance of things, like WV4Marriage.com says. No, we want to indoctrinate them and get them and start them on the toasters and just baptize them in the gay agenda. Phew! And we're going to turn West Virginia into a lesbian playground. That's right.
It's time to legally define marriage now, before costly litigation makes it politically and practically impossible. West Virginians should define marriage, not judges under pressure to be progressive.
Judges under pressure to be progressive. Yeah, because we want judges under pressure to be regressive. We want to pressure those judges to go and be knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, Stone Age freaks. Eesh.
Virginians have an opportunity to take a stand for God's design, but only if elected officials will allow a vote in 2009. and West Virginians clearly desire to preserve the definition of marriage as one man and one woman in our state constitution.
Our state being Georgia, just reminding you.
What's also clear is that to pass a marriage amendment in West Virginia this year, the church must lead. Pastors and their congregations must be willing and committed to defending God's design for marriage.
I'm just real quick, this guy that does the voiceover, have you noticed that he has a way of doing the voiceovers for all these right-wing little filmettes? He's almost as ubiquitous as the movie phone guy. In a world where homos want to destroy marriage, in West Virginia where lesbians want to adopt, the church must take a stand. At 7:15, 9:25, and 11:13.
Marriage. Please, pray about your active involvement at this critical moment in our state's history. Some of the things you can do include praying for marriage in West Virginia.
Oh, just pray and pray and pray. Never mind, don't do nothing else. I mean, he is the Almighty, after all. Just pray. Leave your legislators alone. Don't write no letters to the editor. Just leave it all be. Just pray. Because, I mean, after all, the racket tells you, prayer works, right? You can just pray all them gay folks right out of the state of West Virginia. Just pray them away. Why? Hey, I got an idea. Why don't the good right-wing Christians pray for some of them sludge dams to collapse? Because there's got to be some gay folk in the coal fields. There you go. That'd do it, wouldn't it? No, that's not going to be enough. You know, it's kind of like when the Pope rides around with 2 inches of bulletproof glass around him. That's a lot more effective than praying that he don't get shot at, ain't it?
Meeting personally with your delegate
and see, state told senator. Browbeat your delegate.
With them your concerns about religious freedom and the moral definition of marriage. Ask for their support to allow the people of West Virginia to decide on marriage, not unaccountable judges. Pray for them. And remember that it is the church's calling to speak truth to power. So power will speak the truth.
Jesus, that's sickening. The church speaks truth to power. When the single most power-wielding force outside of a coal company inside the territorial confines of this state is fundamentalism. That's the problem in this state, and so much of the South, is that no one is speaking truth to power because no one is able to speak to the fundamentalists that rule state governments with an iron, fascist, jackbooted approach to governance that hasn't been seen since the 20s and 30s. So power will speak the truth. See, that's what... I'm sure that our little fundy and right-wing lurkers will love this, but let me just say this. I hate the word believe, and I despise the word truth for a reason. Because if I sit here and I, you know, and that's the reason it gets used so much in the right wing, you know, that oxycontin munching, refreshing burst of flavor, freak flush flimball coming on there. My friends, I am America's truth detector with half my brain tied behind my back. Why do you think he uses that word truth so much? Because as long as you say it's the truth, you can ignore the facts. Isn't that it? Isn't it? You can say you got the truth all day long. You know, the truth is that a talking, you know, gossipy water moccasin had a conversation with a naked lady in the jungle, and she went and ate some particular piece of fruit that she wasn't supposed to and gave it to her husband, and then that just pretty much screwed the goose for humanity. That's truth. Eat the little cracker, it turns into a piece of Jesus meat in your belly. That's truth. The concentration camp at Guantanamo Bay is filled with nothing more than fraternity pranks. That's truth. That's the daily truth in the right wing. If, however, you excise that filthy little word and replace it with the one that actually means something, to wit, facts, then all that stuff goes down the cloaca, if you will.
Your involvement matters. Voting and
oh, look, it's another little white couple. And I'm telling you, I know a little bit about West Virginia, and that little white couple standing in front of their little McMansion that they probably can't make the payments on anymore is not happening in West Virginia. White 20-something husband, little white 20-something wife, probably about a 4-year-old white little daughter, and a little white baby sucking on a bottle. There is not a person of color in this entire video. Not one. Just saying.
Involvement in the public square is central to being.
Another white daddy.
Bearing witness to the truth.
And I don't know if it's the lens or what, but there's the white wife, and she looks like a giantess.
2009 is West Virginia.
Another white family.
To take a stand for God's design.
One white man, one white woman. That's marriage.
The time to preserve the definition of marriage in our Constitution is now. One man. One woman. That's marriage.
White man. White woman. Just to be clear. Do you understand how utterly irrelevant the right wing is now? How morally bankrupt, how ethically dead they are all the way down to their core? We have crises in this country. We have people all over this nation, from Detroit to places like Spring Hill, Tennessee, worried. Literally about where their next paycheck is coming from. Because of the financial difficulties of General Motors, there are even people in Sweden scared stiff. Wondering if their beloved Saab brand will drop dead because of the greed and mismanagement of Detroit's auto executives. Not the workers, the executives. We have an environment that is steadily being poisoned. We have problems, we have education problems, we have problems feeding our people. We don't even raise the majority of the food we eat in this country anymore, in part because we have covered up the places where we grew the food that we ate with McMansions that no one can afford anymore. This is America. This is real America. This is an America where people, you know, lawyer ladies out in California who had been making, you know, nice, tidy salaries find themselves in the unemployment line, along with hundreds of others just like her. That America. This is an America that the thugs that created WV4Marriage.com helped create with their slavish sycophancy toward George W. Bush in the last 8 years, the last tormented, tortured 8 years of this nation's history. And still, they pump their filth. Because they've got to keep the mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking fundamentalist faithful stirred up and ginned up. Because otherwise the checks stop coming. And the people that make these videos have to actually go out and work for a living. Instead of poisoning the dialogue in this country. So I just wanted you to know where things stand. We spend a lot of time talking about real problems and hopefully real solutions in this country. And we sometimes think that maybe we've got a chance. Not as long as those people are out there. They must be rendered absolutely irrelevant. It's a shame I don't get around them because I can't be silent anymore. I'll look at them. I'll look them in the eye and say, "You make me sick. You make me physically ill. You disgust me, you fundy." Because they do. Because we have real problems in this country, and they are problems that are addressed by much of what that brown-skinned Nazarene carpenter said But they're not interested in his words. They're interested only in the words of an itinerant tent maker addled by poisonous tent making leather processing fumes and the hallucinogenic ravings of people who didn't understand the concept behind a wheelbarrow in the Old Testament. Gandhi was right. I like your Christ. I do not like your Christians. They are so unlike your Christ. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan.
Did anybody besides me notice that while they were going through all this litany of things that, you know, like their schools and so on and so forth, the first thing that popped into my head was they're describing madrasas.
Yeah, they are. and frankly, they won't call it that, but they want Sharia law in this country.
Exactly.
Only they don't want Sharia law; they want their law.
Yeah.
You know, stoning and all the fun stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, if you look at Sharia law and their law, there's not that much difference.
No. No rights for women. No gambling. No drinking. No.
Of course, you're one of the upper ones, and then you can do what you want.
Yeah. Right. And that's always the case.
Yeah. Another, I kind of wonder, though, whether or not this is beginning to sink down into that layer where the fundies live. The situation. Because there's an AP report out, a guy walked into the Crystal Cathedral today and blew his brains out.
Nice.
Yep. Right in front of God.
God and everybody. Yeah.
Yep. So, and just to top off, just to top off your day, Bob, I gotta tell you this one.
Okay.
Michelle Bachmann's at it again.
Oh, what was that? I saw passing reference to her, and I just can't stand to look at her long enough to read the what was it?
Quote, "We're running out of rich people in this country."
Must be planting them too deep.
Oh, God. That's her objection. We're running out of rich people in this country.
That's too astonishing to comprehend, Susan.
Sheesh.
Where'd they go? Were they eaten up by their own excesses? Did their greed get the better of them? No, I'm sure it's liberal, secular humanists that are doing away with the rich people.
Now, I wonder if any of these organizations, you know, these churches, will stop and think before they head out in their little, screeds following the orders in this video that you were running. I wonder if any of them are going to stop and think, hey, wait a minute. Am I going to wipe out my IRS exemption? Okay, it's one thing for that organization to say stuff like this, but they're talking about churches doing it. Oops. When they start getting into the political process, that's a no-no.
Yeah, it is. And maybe we've actually got an IRS that'll deal with it now.
Hey, yeah, isn't that a nice thought? Oh, there is one other question. It has nothing to do with prayer meeting, but I've been dying to ask this of you, and this is the first chance I've had a chance to do so. Okay, all these Wall Street bailouts, they're giving this all this money to these banks, and yesterday there was the news broke about Cantor's wife, who works for this bank that didn't even need the money, but they arranged so they would get it anyway.
Yeah, she knew nothing.
Very good, Sergeant Schultz there. What I want to know is, okay, if I go down and apply for food stamps, they're going to want to know my income or lack thereof all the way back to my...
high school graduation?
Yeah, more or less. Where is the requirement that these banks prove that they need the money? Why aren't auditors going...
Well, no, that's... Well, see, that's the thing, Susan. I read that story and touched on it briefly in the hour I did last night. And what this New York bank, whatever the name of it was, they called their accountants, and their accountants readjusted their tax status to make them eligible for the corporate welfare.
Okay, now that should not be allowed.
So all you've got to do is go and monkey with last year's 1040. Let's say you make $250,000 a year. All you got to do is go back, take the pencil eraser to it, you know, because that's why you do it in pencil, not ink. Take the pencil and show that you're broke, and boom, food stamps.
Yeah, well, there's only one problem. You got to prove it.
Oh.
And if
that's not enough, you mean changing your accounting practices is not enough to get you on food stamps?
Yeah, well, actually, it'll get you talking to a really humorless IRS agent who wants to know what's this bit with your visit check.
Well, damn.
And the only way that you can get around it is by not making enough money to even file. And they check that, too.
No wonder we're running out of rich people.
Yeah, so...
They're all going to prison.
Yeah.
No, wait, they're not.
No, they're not. They should be. What I want to know is why haven't the bank auditors gone in before anybody got so much as a dime?
Yeah, it's not an unreasonable query, Susan.
Because we don't even know for sure who owes what to who or how much.
Yeah, but remember when Bush rammed this down our throats? Not going to do the voice. I promised I wouldn't do the voice. It was a pressing emergency, and we had to do it now, or the sky was going to fall.
Okay, that's Bush. This is Obama. Why isn't he saying, "Okay, guys, here come the auditors"?
Because maybe George Bush crippled the federal government to the level. Where
I don't know. But I do know that maybe rather than do the regular audits on these local banks that are chugging along just fine, maybe they should skip those and tackle these Wall Street banks for a while.
There's a notion.
And then go back to doing.
But I that was a serious point that I made, Susan, is that, you know, in the 8 years that George W. Bush illegally occupied the White House, He did everything in his power to destroy the regulatory infrastructure. You know, the rest of the roads and the bridges and all that other infrastructure, sidewalks and things like that. That's not all that he went after. He went after the regulatory infrastructure with an especial zeal to make sure that there wouldn't be bank auditors. I mean, there were legal. Remember, he appointed that Christopher Cox creep to run the SEC.
And who promptly climbed in bed with Wall Street.
Sure. That's what he was put there to do, Susan, you know.
And, you know, it just... Okay, here's a real good government stimulus. Bank auditors needed. The government should start hiring bank auditors and start going through these banks like there's without a borough. And then prosecute as needed.
Lather, rinse, repeat.
Exactly. And while you're at it, bring in the IRS. Because how much of that income that they've ripped off have they reported? Al Capone comes to mind.
I'd love to.
Get him on murder. Got him on taxes.
Got him on taxes. Absolutely. Susan, a lot of good food for thought there. I appreciate it. And don't be such a stranger. How's the foot?
Slowly coming along. That's why I haven't been up here as often as I wanted to be. It depends on how it's feeling.
Yeah, and I, you know, those things are weather impacted by weather too. You've probably had a little bit of weather to make it a little more unpleasant.
Yeah, we even had snow a little while ago.
Well, like I said, we're having thunderstorms in February.
Climate change. Wonderful. Anyway, give my love to Agnes and the kids.
Absolutely. And tell Donald we said hi.
I will. And you have a good evening.
All right. Take care, Susan.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye now. News Ninja Susan calling from Columbia City, Oregon, and rolling right along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening, Bob, from beautiful Middle Tennessee.
Hey, David, what's up?
How's the sound? Because I'm using a really cheesy little earpiece that's handy for me, but I don't want to be like tearing your head off. Is it okay?
It's a little sardine canny, but we'll survive.
Well, let's fix that. How's this?
You just got much more real.
Oh, good. I like being real. Because especially today, speaking of weather, the tornado watch is over, the clouds aren't there, and the wind has dropped from 30 to 10. So, you know, suddenly it's a great day.
No more lawn furniture flying around the backyard?
No, but four of my neighbors have those Kirbys in places they didn't put them this morning for the garbage man. They'll sort them out. I think they all know their respective numbers that are stamped on the darn things. But that's not the reason I called.
No.
I took one for the team last night, and this is probably about a two-minute setup to get to the chance for the door to open wide and you to go through and, you know, spread your magic cape, display your big yellow ass, and prove to the world you are the happening guy. I listened to Bill O'Reilly for a while last night.
Ew, you did take one for the team.
Yeah, I'm expecting cookies at bedtime for that. Not a toaster, not a toaster, but cookies at bedtime I'm expecting. And right in the middle of it, that crackpot tried to pull together two things that I couldn't believe he was trying to pull together. One, he began to rail against the young English fellow, I think he's in the news, he's referred to as Alfie, supposed to be a 13-year-old that's fathered a child via a 15-year-old. So O'Reilly, on this show that's supposed to be, you know, the direction for the Republican Party's future, he spends 10 minutes screaming about Alfie and unnamed mother and little baby and how he, Bill O'Reilly, knows without question that Alfie's father is a drug addict and an alcoholic and should be flogged. I'm serious.
That's but wait, the baby was born, right?
Oh, yes.
Well, that's God's plan for marriage.
You know, let's let that. We just covered that. You took great care of that one, but wait, there's more. Now, right after that, he says, now, in contrast, in this country, not like in socialist Great Britain, not like in socialized healthcare Great Britain, we have a young lady who has stood up and said, things could be done differently. And he launches into this bouquet of roses to Bristol Palin.
How did I know?
And I, you know, all right, fine. He's trying to glue this thing on, and there's a word I just became comfortable with not that long ago. There's this nexus I hear coming. Train of coming, more
yes,
or less.
Yes.
Now, right in the middle of this, and we're getting close to your turn, he says, and here are the Palins, and here is Bristol. And now that she and Levi have married, and they're good parents, and she's speaking out about the time she lost, this pushes aside as irrelevant all of this stuff about abstinence, this, and no, this is family values. Now that she and Levi, the FU hockey player, have married. I'm going, hold it. So I spent a little time on the tubes with the Google, and I ain't finding a hell of a lot of reference to the marriage of Bristol and Levi.
Well, you were about to lose me on that.
Good.
I didn't get the invite.
No, oh, hell no, not even to the reception. Boy, talk about what I beat up, an open bar in a gig like that. How does that old guy do all of that and still stand up? He's leaning against the wall, Levi. Anyway, now then, here's your straight line. The wheels are falling off of this right-wing hate speech machine. O'Reilly doesn't even know these kids haven't married. Flimball doesn't even know that Matt Robertson kicked his ass. You know, Hannity doesn't even know he's being laughed at by people in his own tribe. Well, those that signed up, I'm not sure he has any real relatives on Earth. But seriously, they and Boehner, oh my God, if we just scream no and if we just manage to run the country into the ground, you know, somewhere between 24 and 36 years after the ruination of the economy, everybody will come out of it and decide that we Republicans were the right thing to create a 200-year future, you know, the Republican Fourth Reich. Seriously, aren't they all just delusional, grasping at straws and going crazy as their world devolves, crumbles, falls apart around them?
And there's examples. That, I mean, there's more than that. One, when you're John Boehner and you've been parodied by Dan Aykroyd.
And I agree completely. If that pumpkin-headed son of a bitch wasn't even more orange, I love the Internet. If he wasn't even more orange than he was that Saturday night, you know, there is no justice in the world. Because, I'm sorry, John Boehner's skin tone, that's not a color that occurs in nature.
No.
There's just no way. I mean, tropical fish don't turn that orange.
No, my goldfish aren't. You, no. No. They're not, and you know, he's...
What's the one they made the movie about that, you know, had the front part of his body? No, he's not even that orange.
No. And so they are. The wheels are off. You're absolutely right about the limb, you know, but then again, when you're crunching him up for the refreshing burst of flavor, and I'm convinced he's still on the junk.
Well, he's doing and saying things that could only come from chemistry. That's not a brain. That's not a brain doing that. That's a brain with some assistance doing that.
Better living through chemistry. Absolutely.
Oh.
But, I breezed. I saw mention of the baby in England. And frankly, David, I got to be brutally honest. First thing out of my head was not why is this news in the same way that, you know, missing white woman shark attack, why is this news? It was, why is this news? Because even in this tiny little hamlet where I live, my children go to school with little boys and little girls in their classes, David, who have fathered children. And you know what? Here's the real backbreaker on that one that will just devastate poor little falafel man. They're church people.
Oh, of course they are. Bob, and I won't go into the details. Sometime when we're together over, you know, that amber elixir, I'll give you the whole story. I worked with a guy, and I was like 18 years old, no, 19, and sheltered. And it was the first time that I had been in complete sensory overload by something that I heard someone say. Well, except for my father when he told me he was going to kill me for something I'd done the day before. We're on a job, we're doing what we're supposed to. And this guy tells me that he walked in on his 13-year-old son doing that procreation thing, and he was so proud because he knew at least his son wasn't a queer.
How did I...
And I just, it was like I almost fell over backwards. You know, I'd taken on the pulling guard occasionally and could stand my ground, and I was rolling backwards going, wait a second, this somebody's going to say this is know, the biggest joke. No. And he was completely comfortable and delightful. And he, just like you said, you know, every time the church doors opened, you couldn't keep that guy away. And I was just, I remain mystified to this day by that thought process. But I know it's out there.
And so O'Reilly does this, David, and he spends 10 minutes on it.
No, he spent 10 minutes on the English kid. He did about a six-minute setup, and then he spent another 6 minutes tying together and driving home the point that America couldn't tolerate socialism. Bill O'Reilly is getting buckets upon buckets of cash. Well, he's going to be, he may lose a little money because the radio show is going because his ratings are slipping, but he spent 20 minutes of airtime with 1 4-minute segment for commercials, so there were 16 minutes of airtime about a purported, and I don't think it's been really established yet for sure, 100%, about a teenager impregnating a teenager in England and him theorizing that because socialism had allowed the kid's father to be a drunkard and a drug addict, the kid could do that and get away with it and be proud of it, and how Bristol Palin and Levi were the antithesis of that, and how America was headed down, you know,
But this implies that he didn't even see the Bristol Palin interview. I mean, I watched it, okay? I subjected myself to it. And that
I stuck with some of it. But
that poor stammering thing, eventually coming around to saying, no, abstinence education doesn't work.
Yeah, talking to my mother's worse than labor. And Mom was 10 feet away. But that made for a great ride back.
Well, she was probably, she was probably otherwise engaged because now she's been in hock for taxes in Alaska. Abstinence only was kind of out the window for little Piper Cub and, right.
Hockey Puck and Wolf Track and all the rest of them.
Yeah, and little Trip Keesh on Flapjack Johnston. I'm sorry, I just laugh every time I think about Flapjack. God! But that may be Bart Kopp's single greatest all-time hit. You know, Trip Keesh on Flapjack Johnston.
Ding, ding, we have a winner.
See, Sarah Palin got paid $17,000 for living at her own house.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. Well, now the Alaska Department of Tax and Revenue said, sister, you owe taxes on that, and you didn't pay them.
Really?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah.
I remember when that first came out, and there was this statement by somebody, maybe it was that Powell's eunuch that she's married to, well, not an entire, but emotionally, he's a eunuch, saying something about every governor has done this, there's nothing unusual, these are not the droids you're looking for, please move along, oops.
Yeah, they didn't move along. It's check right in time at Shea Palin.
Wouldn't that be something?
Well, what did Susan say a couple of minutes ago? You know, they took down Capone.
Oh, exactly.
For tax evasion.
Exactly. Wouldn't that be something if the Republican Party, with the guidance of Hannity and with the guidance of Limbaugh, sucker those poor dumb bastards into bringing Sarah Palin on just as she needs to leave Alaska to avoid a tax lien? How sweet would that be?
Well, yeah, I know that you are an aficionado of old black and white movies, David. And the previous reference to that Susan made, the tax auditors and stuff, I can't help but think of a great character actor by the name of Franklin Pangborn. I don't know if that name rings a bell with you or not.
Oh, yes.
There was always a role for Franklin Pangborn if Mr. Fields, Mr. Duncan Fields, had a script in production. It is Franklin Pangborn to whom Fields says, when he gets off the plane in International House, and says, where am I? And it's Franklin Pangborn who says, woohoo! Don't let the posy fool you. But it's also, more particularly and more to the point, Franklin Pangborn, who is this thin, angular fellow who looks utterly humorous and was probably just an absolute riot in real life. Nobody who looks like that is unfunny. But it was Franklin Pangborn with the pince-nez quizzer glasses, you know, the ones with no stems on them, the pin that hangs from a string, and the big leather accordion expansion briefcase, who walks into the bank in the bank dick. And he is, of course, the bank examiner. And there's, you know, there's another instance of that, another humorless man in Frank Capra's It's a Wonderful Life. And they are without fail portrayed as dour, humorless, black-suited, strictly business, number-crunching nebbishes who will make your life a living hell. And in both instances,
sitting across a desk from those people, having been in a low-grade tax audit once, somehow they have been educated to the fact that they need to be totally passive. They need to be totally quiet. I wasn't sure the woman that was talking to me was breathing because they got all the cards.
Yeah. But that character was created, David, and I think this is kind of my point. Those characters, or that archetype of that character, was created out of Depression-era regulation, where it was determined that the banks would no longer get away with it.
Indeed. Indeed.
And so, consequently, the validity of the assertion that, you know, we need some of those guys. I don't know if there's anybody still out there making those suits anymore, but I'm sure that, you know, a Hollywood costume designer could go into the morgue and find, you know, the costume morgue and find Franklin Pangborn's old bank examiner suit from the bank dick and model copy. We need those people.
It needs to be so dark a blue that it looks like black unless you hit it with a flashlight. And somebody needs to hit the ass of the pants hard enough with an iron until they look like blue steel. And that's the right look.
And give, and you know, we've got accounting grads coming out of college all the time. And we need to hand that suit to some of them and say, kids, go pass your CPA exam. The government's got a job for you to do. Because I really...
Yeah. Yes. And we need to begin to support the idea that their mission in life should not be figure out a way to make $150 million a year as the guy that runs Wall Street, and then when that payment is contested and he's called a bad guy for how he oversaw Wall Street, then he stands up in front of people and says, well, you know, I really wasn't that much involved. The fact that it didn't work is not my fault. Now give me my $150 million.
Well, I mean, just as a matter of inquiry, wouldn't it be nice to go around to all the people ripped off by, say, Madoff and this Stanford creep down in Texas? Just go to their victims and say, how would you feel about bank regulation and investment house regulation and frequent inspection of their books?
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, talk about a ringing endorsement or a chance thereof.
So, I can't help but think that maybe, you know, there's some hope along those lines. But, you know, I don't know, how's right-wing radio going to keep going when, you know, it's O'Reilly doing this and, you know, Sean Hannity barely has time now to do any real stories between pitching. By the way, if anybody, I will never set foot in another Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. He hustles them, you know.
Oh, well. There wasn't much danger of me being able to afford it.
Well, there's that too, but I mean, it's the principle of the thing. I couldn't afford the $20 cream spinach.
No. Around here, well, I don't listen to much right wing radio simply because I can't stand to. But mostly I hear the arguably the worst name in the restaurant business ever. How the hell do you do a great commercial trying to say Ruth's Chris steakhouse without doing what I just did.
Maybe right, sounding like that. Daffy Duck on a bender.
Ruth Chris Steakhouse.
Yeah. And at Ruth's tonight, the special is a lovely seafood salad with a Caesar dressing and that and a little seafood bisque.
And cream spinach on the side.
And don't forget that succulent bread. Yeah, all right. We've done enough. We've covered our Daffy.
Oh, bread. only veterans of the cartoon age can understand that.
I managed a band one time that had a bass player in it, and I swear to God, this is the truth. This guy was totally fried. He started baking his head when he decided not to race bicycles in Southern California when he was 15 and devoted himself completely to pot for the next 10 years of his life. When that kid watched cartoons, first of all, he'd seen every cartoon enough that he could pick a part to recite as the cartoon went along. It was an interactive experience before there was interactive gaming as we know it today. He was part of it. It was one of those remarkable things, and I actually learned something about how the human can perceive art and its presentation. Because watching that young man become part of Tom and Jerry, or the Flintstones, or, you know, the list can go on. So, yes, they're...
Oh, one of my old partners in lunacy, back in my student days, he's one of those can see it once, remember it forever types.
Oh, geez.
And we kept an entire army of deadheads standing in line outside the Civic Arena in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, entertained for about an hour and a half. I mean, the fried cheese sandwich and meat on a stick business out in the parking lot went to zero. Just sitting there doing dialogue from Warner Brothers cartoons.
So that poor bastard hoping to make a living out of rodent on a stick, it didn't work out for him.
No, not till the show moved on the next night. But in that particular instance, it was the overture, the "What's Up, Doc" thing, and with two part harmony and all that, and all these little stone deadheads were just standing around looking at us. Wow. How'd you do that, man?
I was about to say that if you were doing that stuff at the right, well, at the proper, and I bet you were, tempo and pace, they were in some sort of sensory overload because deadheads, they'll get there, but, you know, they may get to your Tuesday point Wednesday morning. And
yeah.
If you were doing that stuff the way you and I saw it on some sort of a screen, whether it be silver speckly or small blue, you know, they were just going, huh? What? They couldn't say huh. There were no spaces in there for them to go, huh, what?
Oh, all right, Rabbit, where are you hiding Muggsy? We know he's here.
Yeah.
Oh,
hey, Muggsy's not here. If Muggsy was hiding in this stove, would I turn the gas on? Yeah, you might, Rabbit. You might. Well, would I light a match and throw it in? Boom. Hey, all right, Rabbit. We'll look for Muggsy in the city.
See what happens? It's terrible. It is terrible.
Blissfully, I really think some of this, there may be some erosion, there may be some awareness, there may be some fight back, there may be some availability of Buggy Whip Radio for something other than these guys, because I really sense there is an implosion. They are falling in on themselves, and God, it couldn't happen to a nicer crowd.
Oh, no, it couldn't. The problem. Go ahead.
I saw it on Crooks and Liars, and it's perfect, and it's the way it read on that website. Robertson bashes Limbaugh, hell freezes over, and it's an easy one to go. Everybody that's mentioned it's gone to it, but for once it's spot on.
And the beauty of all of it. All of this is, I think it was a show a couple of days ago, maybe late last week. It was Friday because I was talking to Preston. That study that came out, it was a real live scientific poll, and it indicated that Rush Limbaugh has an approval rating around 17%. And that's...
And the people making said judgment, and they are described as America in general?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was just a, you know, same old telephone... I don't know if you get those things, David, but for some reason we get them all the time here. They'll ask you what brand of spaghetti you buy, how you feel. And they'll ask you 19 different topics. And then there's an, oh, by the way, what do you think of? And it's somebody's name. And are you a Democrat? Are you a Republican? So they throw all those questions in there to try to establish some sort of statistical baseline so that you can't.
Oh, I get it.
So that you can't game the system, I guess. I don't know. The statistics is not my bag. But they do that, and then bang, there's the one, and you can identify it when you hear it. And by the way, how much do you hate Rush Limbaugh? Or actually, a more fairly phrased question.
I may to get a chance to roll that one down the hill. I might stop screening calls. I have this wonderful phone answering machine that's 20 years old, and I didn't realize it, but the phone marketer guys, or the guys I don't want to talk to, their equipment is so sophisticated, my phone rings once and it clips off because they can sense that there's an answering something on the other end.
Oh, it's very sophisticated.
So anyway, I get 5-6 times a day, I get one ring call. Now, if I am expecting a call from someone, or if it's the time of day when, certain friends sometimes call, I won't let the screener do the thing, and I'll pick up. And, just the other day I got somebody that wanted to know if I listened to the light rock station in town after they asked me which one I listened to, blah, blah, blah. So, no, I don't give many chances to, go off surveys.
But the point is that these people we've been bamboozled for a long time by right wing blather. But the fact of the matter is, it's hard to find people who say, "Oh, I just love that Rush," or Hannity, or O'Reilly, or any of that.
I agree, and you know what? I think that era. Oh, there's 10 or 15% of the people out there that still. They figure out a way to go listen to the podcast if they missed Rush from, the last hour of today's show. There's 10% of America that still do that, but there is not the tsunami of acceptance that he enjoyed 10, 12, 14 years ago. I think most people, just with a shrug of the shoulders, and I think I put this in an email to you, just shrug and go, oh, well, I guess everybody listens to him. That's why he's still on. I don't care much for him. They haven't really come together, haven't clotted yet, and realized, wait a second, I'm standing here with 8 people, and one guy says he sort of likes Rush, and the rest of us say we don't care if he gets off the air. There's going to be a clotting. There's going to be a coalescence. Did I use that word correctly?
Yes, yes.
Good, thank you. There's going to be a coalescence and a coming together, and suddenly everybody's going to say, screw that fat bastard. I'm sick of that stuff.
And they even have to lie about it, of course, David. And that is routinely, if you see something about Flimball, they'll say, who has 20 million listeners a week? Lie. He has the same 5 million. He has the same 4 or less than 4 million all 5 days a week. And so they multiply 5 times 4, and then he's got an audience of 20 million. He's got an audience of less than 4, which actually is pretty paltry when you consider the expanse and the 50,000 watt flamethrowers that he's on.
When that very expansive piece of clothing that belongs to that emperor is proven to not be there, there's going to be a bunch of advertisers. Well, some advertisers are going to be really embarrassed that they stuck with him. You and I think, share the same basic opinion. There is an insane amount of right-wing money going to that guy to prop his drug-riddled ass up. I mean, just like, you know, the right spends tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars to create Heritage or all those other think tanks to spew lies. There's no thinking in there. There's lying. I mean, it's money from that side of the aisle to prop up their own points that let them continue to gouge the nation. And I think an insane amount of that money goes to people like Limbaugh and all the rest of them.
And that's an argument that I've made for a long time, that you can't sit around selling, you know, I've beaten on this a million times, those, you know, vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls, Swedish mattresses, baldness remedies, and Buy Gold Now ads. Those will not, I don't care how many stations they're on, those will not generate enough revenue to even account for Limbaugh's annual salary, let alone that of the executives who syndicate him.
Not even if you add in, you know, the medication that stops guys my age from peeing five times a night, you know, to help us get down to three.
No.
There's not enough cake there for everybody to have a slice.
It's not fiscally sustainable to haul out that little word. So I'm sure that there is some footsie going on between your Heritage Foundations and your American Enterprise Institutes and your U.S. Chamber of Commerce. I mean, look, a lot of these organizations freely admit to, there are websites that I won't name where you can go right now and for a dollar plus shipping, you can have Ann Coulter's new book. Okay? A dollar.
If a woman like Michelle Malkin, who's happy to have her picture taken with a guy holding a sign with a Nazi symbol on it, with a swastika on it, if somebody like that and that poor benighted woman is considered an intellectual by, you know, the people that put all that money, if she can have that, then yes, there's a whole bunch of very strange money being poured into something for purposes that have nothing to do with reality.
Right, but because they're selling the book for a dollar, they're still selling it, and it was mass purchased anyway, so it gets that little dagger symbol next to the New York Times in the New York Times bestseller list, and you know, oh, she's million seller Ann Coulter.
Oh yeah, right.
So you know, for my purposes, I tend to go and look at the Amazon list for a little bit more reasonable reflection of reality. Because
even though Mr. Amazon's quite a right wing guy, but at least he's relatively honest as a business person.
Well, you can at least trust that data a little bit more. I'm not saying you can trust it, but you can trust it more.
So, it's a bit of a pushback against, you know, the automatic.
But the other side of that thing that you raised relating to radio and media and terrestrial buggy whip radio in particular, at a time when our side of the discussion, David, should be poised to absolutely drive a dagger into the cancerous heart of right-wing radio, what happens? We blow up. I mean, I don't know if you've been following it, but I've had a query on air, and I've had emails that basically all you can say is, "Gee, I don't know," about the sad demise of Nova M, and it's been replaced, and you know, mercifully, I'm so glad I was, you know, I'm not just doing this. I'm also a fan. I was sitting worried, you know, is Malloy going to be on the air tonight? Is he going to be on the air tomorrow night? And mercifully, the answer is yes, because there's a successor company and it's still going. But there's a radio station out in San Francisco that does a fine job, Green 960. And I saw some comments by their program director, and he said what I just said. He said he's disgusted. Because, you know, at a time when we could be taking advantage of this, it's all coming unglued through poor management practices, through egotistical talent demands, you know, the works.
That sickens me, and a big part of it, short term, not as big, and I know a little bit about that is some of the egotistical talent demands, and I'll leave that for others to flesh out later when all of it comes out. But part of it, I believe, comes back to something that's always been our problem. We can never, we the progressives, have this disgusting, foolish, silly, childish thing that we can never unite behind two or three causes. You know, there's always going to be somebody throwing bricks that because we haven't done something for something that's number 21 on the top 10 list of worldwide problems, they're going to do everything and they're going to split from us and not participate. And they can't wait 3 years to address their problem, so that they could help to address a massively larger problem. Sadly, I think that figures in. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
No, nothing to correct there. No. The guy at Green 960, this is the statement he made. You might find this interesting. While Rush and Hannity and Mark Levin and Hedgecock and Michael Savage chug along full steam ahead, I'm surrounded by drama, inconsistency, miscommunication, ego, and a trail of wreckage of some very, very bad decisions made by the networks who supply the shows to affiliates like Green 960. You know, that's a guy, you know, it's San Francisco, but it's still an individual radio station. And that, you know, what a damn mess.
2 years ago, I went to a friend's daughter's wedding in Portland, Oregon. And there were three stations doing progressive radio and doing it in an old-fashioned marketing model and going forward and not losing money. The one that had some of the best of it, I'm serious, there were real commercials surrounding Tom Hartman in Portland, Oregon at about 2 in the afternoon. You could hear that show, and you could hear real, honest-to-God commercials.
You mean not vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls?
No erectile dysfunction, no, you know, listen, old folks, stop getting up five times a month. No, it was businesses in that area and national brands that wanted some of the Portland market. Now, either A, they were giving these people commercial airtime, which I rather doubt, or somebody actually said, I'm making a buy in that market on that station because they have enough numbers, and you don't have to be the highest rated station in a market to have a demographic that could be good for a product. You know, and that gets to be in, gets us to a hair splitting discussion that you and I would go to easily, but let's not get too far inside baseball. But yes, it can work, and all you need is a steady stream of a dependable show that's high quality and radio worthy. And Hartman is, and your guy in San Francisco is sounding like he's wishing for.
Well, but that's one of those, and we won't go too in depth on this, but a lot of people talk about this, so I'm assuming that they find it somewhat interesting. One of the things that has happened is, you know, it's not just a paucity of talent. I mean, there aren't ten Mike, there's only one Mike Malloy, okay? There's only one Tom Hartman. There's only one Stephanie Miller. There's only
one.
Thank you. There's only one Guy James. And so that pool is not fully developed. Lord knows, you know, the Horn is trying to do its part to bring the talent along where we can. But A, it's thankless. B, we don't have any money to pay anybody yet. And C, it's brutal. I'm not sitting here climbing up on the cross, you know, while everybody has a cigarette in the veranda, but it's not easy to do. But the second thing out of that, David, is the guys and the women who make it happen, who never crawl behind a microphone, the executives, the marketing people. And just as it was Tom DeLay's desire to literally have an ideological purity test on K Street in Washington, D.C. to make sure that all the lobbyists were right-wing freaks, that same transformative process has taken place in radio. So that, for instance, if you're Air America and you want an executive, you wind up having to go and hire some guy away from Clear Channel.
Ouch.
You know, tell me that's going to be productive. It's an infrastructure thing that goes all the way, David, and I'm, again, not trying to put too fine a point on it, but it goes all the way from people behind the board to the people who own the license, to the people who run the stations, to the people who run the networks, to the talent, to the engineers, and there was a very concerted and very successful effort to drain the talent pool from this side. They literally, I mean, if you want to imagine, I don't know, a wash basin. They literally tilted the wash basin so that all the water flowed out of our end and made a deep spot in the other. Now, some of that's coming home to roost with Clear Channel laying off umpty bajillion people. But for the most part, you know, what happened on our end is that, you know, when somebody can't get a gig anymore, they go and they do something else. Because being liberals, they're multi-talented and multitasking. And it's just damn sad. So,
and being liberal, they can't place a call to some purported think tank.
Bingo.
They can be on staff as a senior advisor dealing in international affairs associated with the Eastern Shore of Maryland.
There you go.
And get $80,000 a year to simply be in the bullpen until they're wanted.
No, that is infrastructure we do not have, and it's infrastructure that is proving damnably difficult to build. So, you know, maybe this is a little bit of behind-the-curtain stuff, and it's not like I'm talking to any broadcast execs or anything. It's just, these are just observations of what has happened to the industry. And it was designed, and it was implemented with malice aforethought by the right wing because they understand how important the medium is. Now, we talk about, you know, Rush Limbaugh's numbers are not what they appear to be, but they're still Rush Limbaugh's numbers, and they're still that Hannity Jobs numbers, and they're still the Savage Beck, you know, the crowd.
Well, the crowd can, and I'm getting really close to the end of this, the crowd can scream, they can turn to each other and say, he really matters. But there is a building phenomenon, and I believe it to be true, that America is catching on. Wait a second. Who's Beck really speaking for? Ethel? Who's this Hannity guy? You know,
on TV, who's that audience that tuned in and was absolutely mesmerized, David, by that in-a-box view of a close-up of his weird, dead little eyes?
That was one of the things that tipped me off, that they are so bloody, and that was really where I normally put the F word, so bloody obvious that they were desperate with a capital D and a side of fries. That was absolutely the worst directorial television I have ever seen in my life. It was utterly foolish. It was demeaning to anybody that was part of it. You've been involved with visuals. You know what television is about. He was talking about looking into, and his close-up was over somebody else's shoulder. And God bless him, Colbert made, well, I'm all right.
Made him eat it.
Here we go. Glad it's the internet radio. Colbert tore him a new ass over that and humiliated that, drove it into the ground, made it foolish and silly and not to be thought of again. And that's another example of the wheels are falling off. They're going to such gimmickry and bad thought processes that obviously they're desperate beyond all recognition. And I have taken a so much time, and you've got to have, I mean, you.
I got a couple blinking, but that's okay. Right. You don't do it a whole lot, and you're more than welcome anytime because, you know, you always bring, you know, coherence and cogency and all that fun stuff to the table.
Wow, I'm cogent?
Yeah. You've created, wait, let's use your new word. You have created a nexus of cogency and coherence.
Oh my Lord! I have a little pink triangle under my chin. I'm I'm feeling quite warm.
Well, you know, nothing that two fingers of brown liquor won't fix.
I can, that's a machine I can operate. Say goodnight, Gracie.
Good night, Gracie. Bye now. Calling from Middle Tennessee, our buddy David. And rolling right along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, but gee, we do it,
I love you.
I'll tell you what, that was a fantastic phone call. I really enjoyed sitting there listening to it. That was just, you guys had me rolling, just in stitches. It was just wonderful.
Don't get me going on the Warner Brothers, because next thing I'll be doing Porky Pig.
For a second there, I thought you were speaking in tongues, but my goodness. It's just, you know, I think you guys are exactly right. The wheels are coming off. I think the wheels are already off, and it's on the side of the road. And
no, they're driving on rims, but, you know, and the big problem, Albert, is that it's not that we don't know they're driving on rims. It's that the people, they don't care if they're, you know, they're infrastructure destructive anyway. You know, they will drive it, they'll drive the body right off the car. Because they think they got a 500,000-mile engine. But the problem are the for-profit media. Because those people are the ones who keep having them on, who keep paying attention to them, who keep acting like that they have something that actually, there's that word again, cogent to say. When they don't. Not even a little bit. You know, nut jobs. I got some video queued up, the audio for it. Of a CNN report on a right-wing hissy being thrown in Atlanta, Georgia, over classes at Georgia State University that deal with male prostitution and oral sex. And a pair of wing nuts there. I don't think taxpayers' money ought to be going to pay for that sort of thing. I mean, if they want to do it, they can do it on their own time. Because they're dirty. See, I'm doing it anyway. They're dirty-minded. You know, remember, it takes a dirty mind to make a dirty word, right, Albert?
Yes, sir.
And as a consequence, they see, because their minds are so filthy, I mean, in the subgutter filthy, they see a class on male prostitution and automatically assume that it's a how-to course.
Yeah, they get the wetsuits on. Got to get the wetsuits on.
Oh, yeah, and then, you know, go kidnap a girl and read the Bible to her while you've got her in an adult diaper.
What was that? Yeah, no, their consciousness is fuzzy and fading out. I'm sorry. They're just, I'm not sorry. I'm actually glad to see them go. You know, I just hope they don't do too much thrashing and damage on the way out. I mean, you know, they are running out of rich people.
I had some lovely barbecued rich person last night in a beautiful Mornay sauce. It was delicious. Yeah, I mean, it's like a couple of things from the start of the program. Our buddy Michael Kid A from the chat room, in response to the right wing making up things to make laws against, like, you know, aborting a fetus because of the gender, which doesn't happen. You know, Michael chimes in and says, next on the agenda, a law to ban unicorn meat.
Oh no, we can't allow that.
And, you know, Maura writing in, when I said, oh, they're going to turn it into a West Virginia, into a lesbian playground, she writes, I'll be moving to West Virginia as soon as possible. Oh, God.
Yeah, that was strange. What was that? Where did you get that?
It came from Huffington Post, but it's a little video that has been mailed to little fundy churches to be played on, you know, the Jumbotron that they've used, church donations to go and purchase, that hangs up above the 52 channel mixer and the custom Gibson Les Paul and the antique Fender bass and, you know, all of that stuff, the Vox amps and that these people can afford. And so, you know, they'll run that on their $1,200 Epson projector on Sunday morning to get all the fundies all whipped up about the homos wanting to get married, because we ain't made it quite sure enough in the West Virginia law that we hate them. It's nuts. And again, it's by an organization in Georgia. You know, when the right wing does it, they're not outside agitators. It's only when we do it.
Well, it's the Christian nation, you know. There's the old Dominionists and, oh, my goodness, gracious. It's just, it's terrifying. I mean, I just, you know, I mean, the nice recourse we have in terms of sanity is that, you know, the wheels and the lower body continues to fall off. Their hypocrisies continue to be exposed. They only start to sound more and more raving. You know, I mean, it in every way, shape, and form, you know, this is not their world anymore. And, you know, they have to learn how to adapt or, you know, eventually their children are not. If Bristol Palin's kid doesn't even buy her mother's bull crap, do you think any of these other? I mean, they just, sure, yeah. I know. You're always going to have those poor little seven-year-old preachers that they drag into New York City and everything else. But, you know, I think they've always been the exception to the rule. And I just can't see these. They don't got anything. They have nothing. I mean, the Emperor's No Clothes is exactly right. They're spinning absolutely nothing, and then they're hiring the people that see it. And they've been doing that for 20 plus 50 years, and, you know, this is where we are now. You know, I honestly don't speak to anybody that anymore that talks that kind of jargon in my ear. There isn't a single. You know, I don't hear any iota of any kind of, you know, sympathy for the banks or any kind of other bullcrap that they're trying to pawn off on us. I mean, the fact of the matter is these people have been stealing and stealing and stealing and, you know, lying and torturing and, you know, it's just everything that they've been doing, you know, I hope he does. I hope Obama does and pulls this curtain back all the way. We need to clean, you know, how the hell are you going to get these bed bugs out if you don't put the, you know, put them in the wash with some bleach? It's just. Yeah,
and that's my point, Albert. I mean, I'm looking at a statistic right now. The number of Americans losing health care coverage every day, 14,000.
Mm.
You know, do the math that I can't do and come up with what that is on a month. That, you know, that's 140,000 in 10, and 12, 3, 4, that's 420,000 a month losing health care coverage. And meanwhile, these fundamentalist churches are out there and they're sitting there squealing in the pews and getting themselves into orgiastic frenzies
mm-hmm.
over marriage.
Yeah. Marriage.
And I mean, but the thing is that the reason I bring this stuff up is not because it's, well, you know, we have a lot of fun with them, but these sons of bitches are not backing down, Albert. I got audio right now from a Utah state senator by the name of Senator Chris Butters, calling South Park, who was just screaming and carrying on and making an ass of himself. They say, talking about gay folk, they say I'm born that way. Well, there's some truth to that in that some people are born with an attraction to alcohol. They're not backing down one bit because, thanks to Proposition Hate in California, they think that they've got something they can run with and win with.
But I think that's good. That's a good strategy. It's like playing Left 4 Dead with every man, you know, 100 yards apart, and anybody who's played the game would know how quickly that would end. You don't go into zombie hordes by yourself. And that's what these people are doing. I mean, they're running against progression. They're running against progression. Their Orwellian word, their dictionary has run out of words and run out of terms. There's only so many ways you can sit there and spin a word. And, you know, not for nothing. If they're going to sit there and hang on the homosexual this or the, you know, whatever little, you know, culture war bullcrap they're just going to try to spin with the way everybody's economy and the way their wallets are going to look and the way that truths are going to come out under stress and families are going to be, you know, more and more people, you know, will sit there and have gay children. And there will be, it's just going to be a tsunami of just, I mean, they're just going to be extinguished. I mean, they're going to be like, you know, they're like a weak fire. I mean, that just gets rained on. And it's just that they're
you'll get a big kick. You'll get a kick out of this, though, Albert. You're familiar with Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal, right?
Yeah, he's a joy, ain't he?
Yeah, he might for Louisiana.
for the state of Louisiana, he might reject the stimulus money coming that way, something like $3.8 billion for Louisiana.
Yeah, right.
You know, hurricane-ravaged, broken Louisiana. He might reject the money. He should be impeached if he does. But that's not just – that's not it. You know, that's not all. He signed into law a bill that it's one of those stealth creationism bills that wants to teach gravity as a theory, you know.
Okay.
Well, the National Association of Teachers of Biology, or whatever they're called, that's not their name, but they were going to have their convention in New Orleans because New Orleans is a great place to have a convention. You know, you're doing the right thing by bringing your money to New Orleans and, and trying to bolster, you know, what's left of that economy.
Yep.
Well, they're not now.
Mm-hmm.
No, no, wait, you're going to love this. I mean, there's bound to be an Idiocracy reference in here somewhere.
Okay.
Instead of going to New Orleans with their convention, the National Association of Teachers of Biology, or whatever they're called, you know, there's like 2,000 of them or something. They're taking their convention to Salt Lake City. Isn't that stunning? And there's a kind of a little poke in the eye about that, because a lot of New Orleanians were really bummed out when the New Orleans Jazz picked up and moved their NBA franchise to Salt Lake City, and this is that again.
Huh.
And it's just, I mean, the irony was not lost on me. But, you know, why would teachers of biology go to a place where their brains and their science and their knowledge are not welcome? Because when Bobby Jindal does that kind of stuff, and granted, it makes him a darling of the right, even though he's kind of funny looking and not quite as white as we'd like him to be, and he's got that strange name, he is Christian. And he's a darling inside Fundy churches. There are those who think that it's going to be one of those steel cage Texas chainsaw death matches between him and Sarah Palin in 2012. No matter what he says, I guess what I'm getting at is while you're absolutely right, Albert, we can never ever take the light off of them. Because, you know what happens to cockroaches when you turn the light out. They come back out.
Right. That's right. They start humping again. And, they lay eggs. No, seriously, we need an open floor plan. We need to do so much reconstruction. You know, it just boggles the mind. How can you, it's funny, you speak about Bobby Jindal, but I was paying attention to my neighbor over here in Minnesota, Tim Pawlenty, or whatever his name is. And, you know, he's a big Weasley guy, too. He's a Weasley, stinky, slippery rat that, you know, likes to talk about, I condemn the stimulus package and this and this and that. And it just makes me laugh because I wonder who the hell does he think he's talking to? You know, who do you think are these rugged Joe the Plumber? You know, you're talking about demographics and stuff like that. Well, what's the market for that kind of talk? Who? Construction workers, road builders, bridge builders, solar panel roof installers. I mean, all these laborers, okay, that are American laborers, that's who you're talking to when you tell them, we don't want to do that. Because the thing is, it not only impacts these people on a paycheck or anything else, if we don't create the economy. See, this is one thing that just makes me laugh when people talk about these words, and I don't think understand the whole implications of what that means. You know, the economy of tomorrow is not going to be the economy that's dead now. In a lot of ways, there's not going to be a lot of semblance to even recognizing the old economy. There's going to be so many different changes that have to take place if we're going to move forward. You know, like when I heard Mark Levin talking about this, and it makes me laugh. That's gone. This whole idea of centralized power, these kinds of things, these things that we talk about, these ideas that are out there and they're circulating around, they're going to make it to these people that have been without power, these millions of people that have been without power, and these people that get impacted by these things. And they're going to sit there and, you know, like, I'll never forget the first places I've seen solar panels. We're all in these places that are red states. When I was a kid going down, you know, down south, what have you, you know, when I was actually born down in Florida. But, you know, so, I mean, I remember seeing these things back then in these red states. And, you know, people down there, they understand that, you know, you got your health insurance, right? That's what, $300, $1,000, however much a month. Then you got your auto insurance. Then you got this, and then you got your power bill. Now you got your power bill. Your power bill is it only goes up every year, year after year, year after year. Don't ever get on a budget program, because if you do that, forget it. That's like buying a TV at a rent-to-own place to jack you up, and you pay $3,000 for it. And it's the same exact thing with the power. And you know, they're preying on poor people and only making them poorer while making themselves richer. And now that we're all sucked up and dried out, and you know, I mean, I know I'm going to get on a rant here, but what the hell is GM and Chrysler? What are they talking about now? Didn't they just get freaking billions and billions and billions of dollars?
Yeah, they did.
Get that? What the? This is why I'm telling you, they need to be. We need to get them on the altar, slice their throats, spread their entrails to the northeast, west, south, and west, and burn the body and send it out into space to the sun. Because these people, that's gone. That has to go away. Are automobile people, are people going to want to still travel? You bet. There's a market there. Let some of this capitalism, let some of the more positive things about capitalism flourish. You know, when you're planting with organic matter, okay, you know, just because it's organic doesn't mean it's a safe, or you can just put tons of it on there. Because if you put too much organic nitrogen into a garden, you're going to burn your plants. Just as you put in too much of anything. So when we have the economy that we've had with too many rich people sucking off, sitting there poisoning our wells with cheap, crappy products that we have to replace every 5 years, you know, like a dishwasher or a washing machine, like I just had to do. You know, you sit there, you think, go look at how much these washing machines cost now. My goodness gracious, how can you afford to do that every year? Pay your insurance, pay your this, pay your health care. Where the hell's the money for us? Where's our vacation? Where's all this? And I think that as these years go on, and as we start seeing infrastructure build up, you know, green jobs, green energy jobs, you know, people having solar panels on their roofs, and that releases some of that stress of every month I have to make X amount of money. And if we can sit there and start freeing up the people that, you know, really are the ones who drive this economy, not these schleppy, murderous thugs on Wall Street that, you know, they see people flying out of the towers and they're like, oh, gold's going to go up, and they start going and selling gold. We're not talking like that. Those people are not the masters of the universe. They're not corporals of the universe. They should be the fodder of the universe. We need to, you know, start new segments without them in it, and essentially, you know, create new pictures. We need to sit here, and for ourselves, we need to picture wealth, health, you know, self-awareness, you know, and prosperity, and we need to put ourselves in that picture. We have to do it. We do it. Now, screw Bobby Jindal and Plenty and whoever the frick else and Beck and all the other giant freaks that are out there. They're not talking for us. You're talking for us, Bob. Okay? We're talking to each other. In the end, you know, I just can't sit here and, you know, I can't even see a future that these people are trying to spin. I really can't.
Oh, I know. Albert, I tell you what, you're still in the chat room, right? I mean, are you still at your computer as we speak?
Yes. I'm not as we speak.
I just posted a link inside the chat room, and this is what makes this such a wonderful multimedia experience. This is a photograph from Mock Paper Scissors that was provided me by our blogger, Texas Betsy. This has to be seen to be believed. This is the new scope Ford F-650 XUV. I take it you're seeing it.
Well, you know, the only thing that scares me about that is it looks like one of those cop vehicles from, you know, Judge Dredd.
It looks like the Canyon Arrow from The Simpsons.
What is that? There's 515 rows in that thing? My goodness. How much gas? You couldn't even, you know, it's like my brother-in-law. He builds these boats for all these really rich people up in Menominee or one of their places. And, you know, these boats, bud. Everybody listening to the horn right now could barely afford to fill the gas tank in these things. You know, I mean, look at that gas tank. What is that? I've never even seen a semi-truck with a gas tank that big. And there's probably two of them, of course. And that is just so ostentatiously just...
Yeah, but you know that there are Americans out there, especially, you know, those rich that we don't have, that we're, you know, we're losing. They're sitting, Madge, I'm going to get you one of those. You'd be safe in that.
Oh, filthy. That's filthy. No, but see, that's not sustainable. See, like, you know, this is what I mean. Like, this is why I say they're extinct. It's like, you know, if the dinosaurs are eating ferns and the ferns are all just going away and, you know, evolution creates bigger and bigger dinosaurs, I don't think so. Like they go against nature. They everything about them is just, you know, contrary to, like, how things are supposed to go. They push water up hills. It's just ridiculous. They're absolutely insane. It just boggles the mind to think that these people are still... No, it doesn't. It's too soon. See, that's the other thing. You know, these past few years, these 8 years have felt like so long that I think our whole scope of time is a little bit, at least my clock on time is screwy, because, you know, these past, you know, that now that I've been able to breathe just a little bit and relax just a little bit, and I've seen progress in, you know, just the collective discussion, you know, constantly, even on the NPR, I hear people come on and just blow my mind every day, or, you know, whenever I listen. And, you know, I come on here, and then I'll sit there and I'll look on TV, or, you know, on the internet, and I'll see that, and man, it bolsters my, you know, my hope and my faith in this, that we're actually going to survive for another millennia. You know, that's like kind of my big thing. I'd like to see my children in a world that, heck, they feel like they want to live in, you know?
I know,
I don't want to see a world.
Let's. I want to, because it is so. You give such good life, Albert, to this sort of stuff when it comes along. I mentioned the Ashley Judd story and the right wing freak out that went down.
Mm-hmm.
I just got to share some of this with you. Cold dupes. You know, they're. It's just sad, these people who are so silly. They think that they're doing good, working for Massey, that kind of thing. They are out there.
Yeah.
Ms. Judd was sobbing and could hardly get her breath in expressing her joy over living in an America where abortions were easy to get. Then she's outraged over wolves being killed in Alaska. Now she's taking on mountaintop mining. I guess that is what actresses do when they can't get a job. Anything to get her name in the news. Maybe eco-friendly producers like Robert Redford will take notice and put her in their latest flick. What a silly family. But that's not the worst of it. No.
That's just... Okay.
No. I got it. It'll take me a second, because I saw one that made me literally spray grape juice out of my mouth. Ashley may be from Kentucky, but it is very apparent she no longer lives here. She lives in a mansion in Tennessee. Yeah, because that's a different part of the country. With her race car driver husband, and don't have to worry about feeding her children with money made from coal mining. So sit upon your high horse, Ms. Judd, with your millions of dollars. You can, as an American, judge us and Alaskans because they hunt mooses, but we as Americans will no longer support you by watching your movies, buying your clothing line, or purchasing anything from any sponsor on your husband's race car. See, we pay attention to racing. No, I added that last part, but yeah. They're going to boycott the sponsors on Dario Franchitti's race car. Because they're not... Right, because the mountaintop removal families are no longer going to buy any Campari.
Or Pellegrino.
There, see? Yeah, exactly.
but that's what I mean. They're freaking out. You know, it's like, yeah, it reminds me of, you know, obviously these kinds of things, I use as like a metaphor in terms of parts of my life. And, you know, when I see that kind of stuff, it reminds me of this time I took this guy out into the reefs of Guam. And the currents out there are just horrendous and just, you know, come on you like a tornado and suck you off the sea. And that happened. And yeah, I remember I panicked and remember sitting there looking for a rope, and we're in the middle of the ocean. There's no rope, and he's getting pulled out further and further, and people drowned out there constantly. So, I mean, all this stuff's racing through my mind. And I remember the one thing that you need to remember when you're on the water, and it's the one thing that every hitchhiker needs to have and needs to know, besides his towel, is you can't panic. And they're panicked. They're completely panicked. They're completely throwing everything they can find at the wall. The monkeys in the cage are so out of control that we're going to have to put Valium gas in there to just calm them down and put them to sleep. You know, not to kill them or nothing. I'm just saying to put them to sleep and take them out and give them their, brush their teeth and wipe the poop out of their hair and all that other stuff and maybe separate them a little bit and kind of say, relax. You know, we can retrain these monkeys, make them better, I guess. I don't know. They've lost it. They've, like, completely lost it. They're going after, things that aren't even on the radar. You know, Ashley Judd, like, when they do these things, they're just bringing more attention into it. It's like if you came home and your kids are throwing a party and they're sitting on the couch and the couch cushions are all bubbled up and they're just relaxing. Oh, no, there's nothing on the couch. Like one of those cheesy sitcoms. You know what I'm saying? Like, what the hell's under the couch? I mean, what is under the couch? And that's what they're doing. They're throwing their arms and talking about gay marriage and all this other stuff and all these, you know, myths and fabrications. And sure, there's going to be the people that will pick up some hitchhiker and take her home and do just what the hell was he doing. But whatever he was doing, they'll do that. And what was that? That's so scary. I mean, the lady was probably screaming, just kill me already. I mean, that would be terrifying. Because that's just so, I mean, like there's creepy, and then there's religious creepy. And religious creepy is...
Yeah, well, and it's religious creepy that winds up working on a woman's suit. You know what I mean? Oh, here, let me devastate you with just one more, Albert, because these are too all fun, right. And you know, you're the guy to share this stuff with.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
I say Earth first. We can mine other planets later. Go back to your race car driver, Mario or Dario or whatever. He ain't a real driver anyway, not like Dale Jr. Yeah, he ain't a real driver like Dale Jr. because Dario Franchitti actually has to make his steering wheel go left and right.
They just never fail. They just don't stop. That's mine. What? Mike?
I know. It's furniture kicking time, isn't it?
They're just the Harkonians. I mean, they're just...
Just floating around in their anti-grav chamber getting their pustules suck.
You have beautiful skin, Baron. You're so wonderfully beautiful. And that's what they tell themselves. They look in the mirror and they're just dissociated. We need to keep PCP out of these people's hands. I think if we, banned all PCP or whatever and kind of chemicals that can make them, that they'd snap out of it. They really would eventually. They'd eventually just say, whoa, wait a minute. I'm in a cardboard box. What the hell's going on here? You know, we're sitting here eating, finding morsels left in old tuna cans from 20 years ago and all this other stuff and garbage dumps. I mean, I don't understand where they think they're going. Where the hell do you think you're going? I mean, if people ain't here to discover, trilithium, dilithium crystals, we're never getting the hell off this planet. So we need to kind of stay around until we can find those things, don't you think?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, come on.
You know, can't the mountain, I think you just touched on something, Albert. I think you just touched on a reason to, like, quintuple the NASA budget. We have got to figure out a way to colonize the asteroids with the mountain remover people.
Amen.
And let them just sit there and blow the rocks right out from under their own asses, and then they're floating in space going...
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I can't do that.
Sorry, Bubba. Not gonna be.
And now the news for Earth. Dario Franchitti's not nearly as good a driver as Dale Jr. See, Mabel, I told you, even though we're out here on this asteroid, he ain't. See there?
I can see the film. I can see it. It's like Space Mad Max or something.
They can race their asteroids on the power they generate from their mining.
Hell, they might have to have a deal with me out there because I'd want to do that job for a year or two at least. I mean, that'd be awesome. But,
no, we've seen the movie, Albert. We know what happens when you go out to mine on the asteroids. Next thing you know, Rutger Hauer's coming back to Earth and he's just,
Well, if they have their way, it would be. You bet.
Only thing is, in this future, Rutger Hauer comes back to Earth with a dip of skull in his lip. Nah, that's Copenhagen. That skull sissy stuff.
You think the synthetics would do that? Hmm.
Well,
they might find,
why not? I mean, it won't hurt them.
True. Well, they can only live for three.
Or maybe they could use the new Camel Snus. Have you seen the promos for that in your store yet?
No, I'm familiar with what the product Snus is, but no, I'm sure that...
No, they've
sure
already installed the little refrigerator in our hometown Rippy Mart.
Really?
Yeah, and there's just there's an absolute Twitter going. When does the Snus get here?
Well, it's safer than that stuff, but you know, I'm never going to say that nobody can not imbibe in something. I just wish that we would not spend, you know, I how I feel about that. You know, I just, you know, let people do what they want to do. I don't have a problem paying taxes that would go to healthcare to pay for somebody who needs facial reconstruction for a lip because they paid in too. You know, I don't mind that. I don't mind sharing. I don't mind doing any of that kind of stuff.
I don't want to lecture the guy that needs a lung transplant. I'd like him to promise that he won't go back to his old Jones when he gets it. But, you know, even that's not necessarily...
True. I mean, you know, and you're not for nothing. You know, we sit there, you know, we need to be cutting out waste, right? We need to be expanding markets. And, you know, not for nothing, Bob, I just got to say, in defense of the, I know it, they're marketing it, and it is Camel, and they're pretty, you know, twisted and evil, but... you know, not for nothing, it is tobacco, but, you know, that product itself from Europe is reported to be a little bit safer, it's a little bit this and that, so, okay, fine. That's fine with me, I don't mind that.
It's Swedish snuff, yeah, you betcha.
It's food grade, yep. I haven't seen any of it around here, and we're this is Norwegia out here, so I'm surprised, but, you know, we sit here and look at, you know, these kinds of different products, and you sit there, and Rachel Maddow, she had that little snippet on her show the other day regarding the DEA, and how even Barack Obama just wasted the money with the, you know, I mean, it's under him. I don't know if he did it, but, you know, we're sitting there wasting, what is it, $185,000 for some trip to Colombia where we got to go down there to spray more, you know, industrial strength grade Roundup, you know, that gets trapped and put in our water supply and everybody's water supply and poisons the earth forever. You know, we spent that much and she found a plane ticket down there for $410. You know, and when we talk about waste and all these other things, you bet your ass I want to see men in blue suits and briefcases, and you know, we need a couple of number crunchers and, you know, pencil necks to sit here and run around and, you know, say, no, we can't do that. We can't afford it. I mean, there's a reason my wife holds the checkbook. I certainly have veto power, but she holds the checkbook because, you know, sometimes I don't think rationally. And sometimes I buy with my emotions, and sometimes I do these
things. Yeah, one word, Deneeb.
Exactly. Deneeb. Oh, I've been real good, but I've been saving. I take a little bit of money here and there, and I save. But... you know, and I got to figure out, you know, that's my offshore accounts, you know, which is, man, if that's the same as these guys at offshore accounts, they're just making too much money. But that's another thing. What is that? That's got to stop totally. We need to come up with something. I hope these Democrats really show some spine in punishing these people that keep stealing and embezzling and, you know, sitting there making offshore accounts and then, you know, making these pyramid schemes and all this other crap. That cancer, that's the cancer of the last, you know, 20-something years. That's got to go bad. I mean, that's got to get just, I hope it's getting noticed more and more and more. That's all I can say about that, buddy. That's really all I can say about that.
Well, you know, I mentioned, I guess it was Monday night, talking with Scott about how I do think about our the Horn audience and the Horn family that we've made here. And last night, as in the foreshortened version of the program, Albert, when I was talking about the stupidity of escalating forces in Afghanistan.
Yes.
And then later hearing Malloy talking about it as well.
Mm-hmm.
I thought of you.
Oh,
and
you.
One phrase.
Hmm.
Arrakis was made to test the faithful.
Yes, indeed. That was actually one of that very subject was what spurred me to call you. I want to talk to you about what was going on in Pakistan and how, you know, the graveyard of empires, and they want to escalate all this stuff. And if Barack Obama does the right thing and start sending over teachers and engineers, not engineers to do the work, mind you, but engineers to oversee or assist or help, you know, or just pencil pushers that go over there and say, yes, Mr. Kabul, you have $100,000 to build this bridge or this school and this, and this is what we're going to be able to spend on bricks, and this is what we're going to be able to spend on nails and caulk and windows and this and that. If we can get there and do real, I don't mind any kind of, introduction of forces, and as long as it's forces, you know, because force is a word that can be used in many different ways. Force doesn't have to necessarily mean violence and war. Okay, we can go over there and use a force of peace and a force of goodwill and a force of, you know, of generosity, and, you know, come to these people with open hands. Okay, you know, not with our hands in our pockets and not with, you know, golden jeweled knives to their throat so we can have, you know, pipeline this and this and that, you know, because of Barack Obama, that's the scale right there that he would teeter on. I don't know if you've had the interesting experience of watching the movie W yet. Well, and while I didn't agree with every single thing in there, and I thought he was portraying George Bush a little too dumb, you know, I don't give George Bush the credit for being stupid that everybody does, even though I can see a bunch of stupid in there. One of the things that really struck me about the movie was, I think Oliver Stone and myself, and maybe historians and yourself, and I think a lot of people see, like, the fulcrum and the tipping point to where George Bush completely lost it, and he nailed it at the same time and just the same, you know, motivations and the same this and that. I think he skirted the oil issue a little bit too much, and I think that was a little bit too much banished, but the movie was long and there's a lot of drinking to do, and I can't believe that guy drank. Have you seen it? Holy cow! My goodness gracious, wake up before you start swigging on the bottle of Jack Daniels. Anyhow, man, that's brutal.
Just anyway, drinking in his sleep, was he?
Yeah, what the hell was that? You haven't seen it yet?
No, I haven't. I really haven't.
Oh. The end scene is just priceless. The last scene is just unbelievable. That stuck with me. Because it's
better than Slim Pickens riding the bomb?
If you put George Bush on the bomb, and then you'd have to have George Bush in the subject. But yeah, maybe. Yeah. In the big scheme of things, I think, yeah. Yeah, it was, that's the way I saw it. And, you know, it really was, you know, when he sat there and did what, did these things in Afghanistan and then, you know, rode that on to Iraq and, you know, the torture and all the other stuff. And when we're sitting here looking at where we are as a nation right now, everything that he's done, I mean, that's the good thing about what he's done, is what he's done is, just like Hitler, okay, showed us exactly what not to do, exactly how not to operate, exactly how not to allow power unchecked and just rampant, you know, cronyism and all this other crap and just setting up the way we've been doing business for way too long. I think George Bush, if he did anything positive, the thing positive he did was show us that we can't go down these roads. We can't do this anymore. These are things that can't happen. You know, because, you know, 14,000 more in Afghanistan can turn into 50,000.
And they will. And don't kid yourself. They will. This, you know, 12,000 announced yesterday is tip of the iceberg stuff. Because it's going to take the equivalent of 27 legions.
Yeah, what's his name had, right? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that was back in the day before they had the RPG and the
I don't know, Albert. Just because I feel so funny because I'm sitting here and I'm just a schmuck who paid, you know, who woke up periodically in college and, you know, read and paid attention a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody in the Pentagon has got to understand that the only way you take and hold Afghanistan is to garrison it.
That won't work. but that won't work. That's too much money.
I mean, okay, obligatory movie reference, The Man Who Would Be King.
Mm-hmm.
That speech right before the end of it, and I don't want to ruin it for anybody who might run out and go see it, but the apology, I'd like to apologize for ruining your life and having you in this situation instead of covered up in all your worldly wealthy dreams. Well, thank you very much. You know, and that's kind of Afghanistan for us.
It's George Bush and anybody who escalates it, eventually having to face the American people and say, I'd like to apologize for breaking America on the rack of a place that has broken countless other empires, countless other nations on the rack before. I'd like to apologize to you for being so unutterably, self-centeredly stupid.
Yes, stupid, stupid.
And frankly, that, you know, when, by the time that happens, it may have to be George Bush and Barack Obama and two or three other people lined up standing there. We apologize. We were morons.
Oh no, we can't allow that, Bob. Mm-mm. We don't have that much time. No, four. It should be the man that's sitting there right now. And I mean, if you're going to put the fire out, that's when you put it out. We can't afford that. I mean, you know, I don't know if anybody's seen the map when they talk about the, what's that beautiful valley? What's that valley called that the Taliban in Pakistan now has? What is that called?
SWAT?
SWAT, yeah, SWAT team. Yeah, that's what I should have thought of that. Anyway, you know, when they sit there, you look at that, and they show the SWAT valley, and they just show this little, you know, state in red. Well, what do you think about the rest of the area around it? I mean, just because the valley feels the way they do and the people that live there in those cities, what do you think about the rest of that area? Look at did you see how rugged that terrain is? Do you have any idea how big the mountains are in that area? How freaking inaccessible it is? I mean, people have been living in that area for, you know, 20,000 years or more, probably much, much, much more. And, you know,
I read some article where it talked about the fact that people live and die in that area and don't know the people who live a quarter mile down the valley from them because it's so hard to reach.
Exactly. It's ridiculous. It's, you know, it's a crazy place out there, and there's no way you can go in there and do anything. With what? With what? You're going to sit there with helicopters as they're shooting Stingers and everything else that we have left over and all the other arms sales and arms deals that our weapons manufacturers have to sell to everybody? See, this is what I'm saying. It's such a purge. It's a flush.
So why is it you get it, I get it, the Horn audience gets it, and they don't get it in Washington? Why? Is it just a case of generals with hammers looking at Afghanistan like a nail?
Well, sure, because that means they get a better job, probably, and a bigger bonus and a bigger golden parachute when they get out of the military and go work for one of these contractors, you know, selling to the other generals that were under them back in the day. I mean, you know, this is the self-perpetuating machine that has to stop. You know, the laws of physics, the laws of nature demand it. And I mean, there is no other way around it. And I hope Barack Obama's wise enough. I think he's wise enough that he recognizes the problem, because I kind of hear it in the inflection of some of the words that he says. I think he says some words and phrases.
I mean, we've seen experiments in things that do work over there. That brilliant little pomegranate project.
Mm-hmm.
Where the guys, the British guy went over and yep. He's got people farming pomegranates now.
Yep, for juice, yeah.
Yeah.
That's really good for you.
And it's one of the best pomegranate growing regions on the planet, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens to just grow in the same kind of soil that opium poppies thrive in.
Yep.
And the nice thing is that, you know, you're not hooked up with the mafia if you're growing pomegranate juice, because, you know, they're not kind to the production end of the spectrum either.
Yeah. Well, as I say, I mean, if these are these areas that do that, okay, I mean, these are these areas that do that in an economically viable kind of thing. I mean, and now I'm not saying I want people to go get hooked on heroin, but you see, that's exactly what the government says when they go in there and do such a thing and then allow warlords and drug dealers to sit there and do this and run amok and buy their weapons and buy this and, you know, and become these little fiefdoms of opium production. Okay, when they sit there, and this is the whole point of the reason that this, you know, the drug war is illegal, it makes this product worth something. If you were to legalize drugs, oh my goodness gracious, the opium production in Afghanistan would drop. But we really wouldn't have to be worried about these people's survival because, man, palm juice is good, and it's good for you, and it tastes good, and you might not love it, but it's pretty good. I like it.
I love it.
I drink it every day. Oh, no doubt. I don't want to pay $20 for an 8-ounce bottle of it. So let them.
And the reason it's $20 for an 8-ounce bottle is because there's not that much of it.
It only grows in Afghanistan. I mean, come on. I can get heroin for cheaper than that.
And then you've just opened the door on the whole scam side of the so-called global economy. Consider, I want some pistachios. Well, I go to my local grocery store, and they got them there in bulk, and a scoop in them, and you take the scoop, and you put it in a little thin plastic bag, and you're out $8. Because they're insanely expensive, because we don't import Iranian pistachios, because we're afraid that they're making nuclear missiles out of them or something.
Oh.
Then there's sugar.
Yeah.
Sugar would be half the price it is if we were not supporting the production of it in three states of the Union.
Yeah. And then allowing slavery and all the other stuff.
Yeah, the pomegranates.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Same thing.
You know, there's... And, you know, for those people, yeah, but I tell you what, I don't want no Jamaican sugar. I don't trust them. Two words. Peanut butter.
Mm.
You know, I mean, the ripple effects of corporate greed, Albert, absolutely make me just nuts. I got a story here in the digital cyber stack, as it were,
mm-hmm.
about the fact that food banks, which are under more pressure than they have ever been since the Great Depression,
mm-hmm.
food banks that provide food to the poor,
mm-hmm.
Are worse off now than they were before because they've had to clean out all of their stocks of peanut products, peanut butter products, because at this point, while the government says, well, you know, your expensive peanut butter, now that's probably safe. Well, guess what the food banks get?
Yeah.
They don't get Jif and Peter Pan. They get Sam's Choice in the way of donations.
Jif and Peter Pan are right there too.
I won't buy that garbage for a different reason.
Yeah, but that's not peanut butter. That's why. Yeah.
That's okay. That's halfway to peanut butter fudge. But you get my point. You know, because you know you go back to somebody like the brilliant scientist Dr. George Washington Carver. You know, who came up with 172 things to do with the peanut. I mean, I remember this from elementary school. 172 things to do with the peanut and 212 to do with the sweet potato. And they really are, they were marvelous economy-changing food staples.
Yep. I mean, well.
And corporate America got hold of it and ruined it. You know, I don't care how long it takes. I want those sons of bitches from Peanut Corporation of America hounded to the ends of the damn earth. I mean, you did catch the part where the guy who was in charge of putting the stuff on the market anyway, even though they already knew it had salmonella in it. You did catch the part where that guy was a Bush appointee to the Food Safety Board.
I'm not shocked. I didn't catch it, but I'm not shocked at all. I'm not shocked. I mean, that's you and I, in terms of corporate, we can sit here and, you know, create our own pulsar regarding, you know, that's how freaking twirled up I get over this. What the hell is it? I mean, it's massive crime. It's crimes against humanity. That's crimes against humanity. How can that not be a crime against humanity? Who the hell eats peanut butter every day? Anybody with kids knows the answer, okay? They want peanut butter sandwich and a peanut butter jelly and a peanut butter on their pancakes and a peanut butter on their French toast. I mean, peanut butter, my kids eat freaking peanut butter. I think it's a third of their body.
I like a peanut butter and banana sandwich myself with a little mayonnaise on toast, me and the king.
Exactly. Everybody eats peanut butter. Now, you sit there and you're going to just sit. I mean, you know, this is why people won't buy that crap anymore. You know, like people will hear this kind of stuff and see this kind of stuff, and even if they're not into it and they don't know the details like you or I may know, or other people know even more than we do, you know, they might not know these things, but they know that these guys are crooked. They know that these guys, man, wait, are you saying that they knew that salmonella was in the peanut butter, but they continued to make it and sell these peanuts anyway?
Yes, yes. I know.
You know, oh, I'm never. Which company is this? I mean, like, you know, and then you,
But that's where you run up against something, Albert, because that's where you can't say, well, you know, it's Peter Pan, or it's Jif, or it's...
No, it's,
Reese's, it's or whatever.
It's applied to them. That's what it is.
Right, because underneath the very thin, shabby veneer of American so-called capitalism is a command Soviet-style economy.
Mm-hmm.
Where all the green beans are canned in one plant. So that when the salmonella or the E. coli or whatever busts out there, the nationwide supply of canned green beans is screwed.
Yeah.
Or Peanut Corporation of America, which is the clearinghouse of the peanut. And when there's a problem with Peanut Corporation of America, everybody's peanut butter is screwed. Or the little shop in the little shop of horrors in China that makes milk-based baby formula for Similac and Nestle. And the off-brand store brands and all of that crap and all the 800 numbers go to the same call center.
Yep.
That is a command economy, Albert.
But they don't trust the Jamaican guy, you know, puffing.
No, because you know he might. Yeah, there might be some marijuana in my sugar.
Yeah, which is certainly kills. I mean, at least 2 million people a year. So. Yeah, we wouldn't want anything like that.
Yeah, Cossack in the chat room brings up tomatoes. Yeah, there's tomatoes.
Oh.
And by the way, I got to bring this up with you because I wanted to make sure it didn't happen until after the dinner hour because I made that promise to Scott the other night.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But it's now, 8:30 on the East Coast, so I think Scott ought to be doing dishes by now. op-ed from E.J. Levy in the New York Times. Provided kindly to me. Oh, thanks, Lottie. Thanks so much. I got this about dinner time the other night. Headline. No, I really do appreciate getting this because this stuff, this isn't cool like, is Lindsay Lohan too skinny now? No. It's not even religious weirdness that we can spend our time on, but Jesus, it needs time spent on it. Title of the op-ed, The Maggots in Your Mushrooms. E.J. Levy, and by the way, who is E.J. Levy? He's a professor of creative writing at the University of Missouri.
Okay.
In its falsely reassuringly subtitled booklet, The Food Defect Action Levels of Natural or Unavoidable Defects in Foods That Present No Health Hazards for Humans, there's a winning title.
that's a book. Boy.
that's the first 10 pages of the damn booklet. The FDA Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition, the CFSAN, establishes acceptable levels of such defects, which are deemed natural contaminants, mold, rodent, hairs, maggots, that kind of things. Everybody, hang on. This is tough, but I had to go through this. You do too. Establishes acceptable levels of such defects for a range of food products from allspice to peanut butter. Hang on, okay? Make sure the youngins are out of the room, Albert. Well, among the booklet's list of allowable defects are, in quotes, insect filth, rodent filth, both hair and excreta pellets, mold, insects, mammalian excreta, rot, insects and larvae, that is to say, maggots, insects and mites, insects and insect eggs. Why? These are all separate categories. It's like something out of MASH. Dropsophila fly, sand and grit, parasites. You can scream stop, Bob, stop anytime you want to, Albert. Parasites, mildew, and foreign matter, which includes objectionable items like sticks, stones, burlap bagging, cigarette butts, and so forth.
Ah, foreign matter, okay. Alien objects.
Yeah, I'm sure they're Mexican cigarette butts.
Yeah.
I'm a tomato juice guy, so this one really, really hurt. And I buy this one particular brand of tomato juice called Red Gold from Indiana because it's not from concentrate.
Mm-hmm.
Which might turn out not to be such a good idea now. Tomato juice, for example, may average, and I quote, 10 or more fly eggs per 100 grams, the equivalent of a small juice glass, or 5 or more fly eggs and 1 or more maggots.
Tomato paste and other pizza sauces are allowed a denser infestation. 30 or more fly eggs per 100 grams, or 15 or more fly eggs and one or more maggots per 100 grams. Then there's the canned mushrooms.
Oh, thank God I stopped eating those things.
May have over 20 or more maggots of any size per 100 grams of drained mushrooms in proportionate liquid, or 5 or more maggots, 2 millimeters or longer. Somebody's out there measuring these, okay? I don't want that job.
Is that easy to find? Oh, God.
5 or more maggots, 2 millimeters or longer per 100 grams of drained mushrooms and proportionate liquid, or an average of 75 mites before the FDA starts getting uppity.
Can?
Your sauerkraut can have up to 50 thrips.
I just had sauerkraut. Why are you telling me that? What the hell's a thrip?
I'm afraid to Google it. Honest to Jesus, I am. But Mr. Levy writes, and when washing down those tiny, slender-winged bugs with a sip of beer, you might consider that just 10 grams of hops could have as many as 2,500 plant lice. Yum.
Plant lice? What?
Plant lice.
Plant lice.
In hops. That's the part where I really stomped my foot on it. Damn.
No. The alcohol. Don't worry about it. The alcohol.
Curry powder's allowed 100 or more bug bits per 25 grams.
No more curry.
Ground thyme has up to 925 insect fragments per 10 grams. You know, and that kind of crap when you buy it in the grocery store, you've seen it. It's a pretty little well-decorated jar that's like an ounce for $6.75.
Oh, you got to come shop where I shop with spices.
I know. No, but I'm talking about like, you know, in the Kroger or whatever.
Yeah.
Ground pepper, up to 475 insect parts per 50 grams. One small shaker of cinnamon could have more than 20 rodent hairs before being considered defective. And salmonella notwithstanding. Salmonella notwithstanding, Albert. You know, I couldn't do this. I could not do this story with anybody but you. Because you can take it.
You're killing me here. That's horrible. What is that? Don't tell me these things anymore.
Salmonella not... Okay,
nice freak.
One more.
All right.
Salmonella notwithstanding, the good stuff, the stuff that doesn't get recalled, peanut butter, may contain approximately 145 bug parts for an 18-ounce jar, or 5 or more rodent hairs for that same jar, or more than 125 milligrams of grit. At this point, I'm not worried about grit.
I was going to say, well, a little grit never hurt anybody. And apparently, maybe some insects parts don't either, and a little rat hair don't kill you. I mean, I've been around. I've eaten, you know, not for nothing. But I hope what this does is I hope these things do come out more and more. And we start moving. Yeah, sure. I want to see tomatoes, you know, from different places. I want to see eggplant. You know, eggplant don't grow around in Wisconsin very well. You know, I want to see this produce and this stuff come around. But I want to see people around the country more concentrated on local ingredients. Heck, it might start a nice little, gastronomical tourism in this country where people go to different... Oh, man, did you hear about the kind of this they have over there?
It's asparagus season. Yeah.
Exactly. It's asparagus season in West Virginia. Let's go down to West Virginia and get some, you know, asparagus grows everywhere. You guys can't corner the market on that. But you know what I'm saying. I mean, it's just like we need to get a little bit more locally, you know,
sure.
Focused. You were telling me that there was thunderstorms, and I just think that they were using the rain to cover up explosions. At least that's the picture I see in my head. You know, that's what kind of scum these people are. Oh, it's raining! Quick! Get that dynamite going! Oh, that was just thunder. What are you? You paranoid liberal? You must be on the pot again. We have to take. I mean, heck, you know, if you want to eat, you know, roach eggs and, you know, mouse parts, you can do that. But you should be able to choose whether you want to do that or not. And I think we need to start taking more accountability of what we put our money into. You know, if Jif and Piffy and all the other Slip Slappy, Peanut Butter, Peter Pan, and all this other crap, and all these other corporate homogenized, you know, mass-produced products are going to do and contain these things, then we need to stop purchasing them. And we will see these CEOs gone, and we will see these things, you know, to be destroyed. I mean, we can sit here and get peanuts from a local peanut farmer in Georgia who's probably been sharecropping there for...
Yeah,
you know,
but see, because of corporate welfare, there are very few of those peanut farmers in Georgia.
True, and that is true.
Same thing with growing, like, you know, tobacco. But we loop back around, Albert, on all of this to the same thing we were talking about with bank examiners.
Yes, sir.
The reason there aren't any... And the reason that there's salmonella in the peanut butter is because there was nobody standing over these corporate thugs going, no, you can't ship that.
Yep.
Because government, we have just spent 8 years out of the last eight, and we have spent 12 years out of the last 20.
Mm-hmm. With no eyes on the prize.
With the idea of government regulation being dismantled.
Yeah. And you can't, I mean, that just...
Because remember, most of this, thanks to the Bush administration, remember how he said he was going to have a trustworthy government and that American business could be trusted to tell tales on itself, and this was all going to be self-reported? Well, when that self-reporting was a convenient way to get rid of paid government regulators. You know, the reason you wind up with downer cattle being picked up with forklifts in Chico, California, and the reason why PETA has to drop the dime on those instead of a USDA inspector is because the Republican Party has gutted government.
Yeah. And that's exactly, you know, it's like they're just suicidal. I just don't understand how they think they can, you know, what world do they think they live in that they can, you know, pollute the air? I mean, I know air is transparent and it's really hard to, like, get a grasp on it and stuff, but we need it to breathe. And if you don't have air, you're going to die real quick. You know, I mean, if you don't have clean water, you're going to die real quick. I think we're so, we talked about this years and years and years ago about how, you know, how comfortable the American people are. That we don't know what it's like to really have starvation. I mean, not in our recent memory. That, I mean, in this own country. Yeah, we see the pictures. Oh, and we'll send the 50 cents a day or whatever, you know, here and there. But, you know, I don't think people really grasp the idea that, man, if you don't have food for 3 days, you know, you start going a little crazy. You know what I mean? Like, if you don't have clean water, I mean, what is it? How much? It's something I always hear different things. I'm, you know, I give a person a week without water and you're pretty much done. You know, a little bit more than that, maybe a couple people are freaks, maybe some people are a little, they can't do it, but, you know, clean water, Bob. I mean, fundamental basic rights of life. I mean, they talk about right to life. Holy cow, what's more righteous than clean water?
Right, yeah. Where are these right to life fundies when we start talking about places like Printer Holler, where the water has been absolutely poisoned and has to be trucked in? Where, and you know, you want to talk about cynical? The governor of West Virginia has announced that in a year's time there will be a water project up Printer Holler. And it's going to bring what we in these parts call city water to that area. But there's 300 families, and only about 225 of them are going to get the city water.
Well, are they going to do lotto? They're going to do it'll
go so far and it won't go any further. It won't go the rest of the way up the holler. And so instantaneously, Joe, being a very, very cynically manipulative politician, realizing that he has a problem on his hand because he's got an entire holler screaming his name, rather than solve the problem for the whole holler, because, you know, this isn't something that's engineering insurmountable. It is possible to get the water all the way up the holler. But you stop it at 225 out of 300 or whatever the number is, and then you let the little holler tear itself to pieces, splitting into factionalism of star-bellied sneeches and sneeches with no stars upon theirs. It is cynical in the extreme, and it's sickening.
It's like, it's almost, I mean, it's like social Darwinism or some crap, or, it's like, or eugenics or something. That's what it rings to mind. I'm not saying, you know, maybe there's something. No, there isn't maybe nothing. That's bull crap. Everybody in the area should have water. I mean, you know, what the hell are we paying our taxes for if we can't have clean water and clean food? I mean, it's like, you know, it's like with, it's the same thing with the insurance companies. Insurance companies, one of these things, this is one of these things that just blows my mind that I don't understand this. It's like, you know, my wife brought this point up to me the other day, and we were driving in the car, and I'm like, my God, I need new tires, you know, because blah, 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 blah. But anyway, I'm like, I need new tires, and that's a very expensive thing. And it's like, you know, I pay, I don't know, $260, whatever it is, for car insurance. Well, isn't that a safety issue? You know, can't I sit there and get my car repaired? I mean, wouldn't it be cheaper for an insurance company to say, you know what, you pay X amount of dollars, we understand that, and we're going to fix your car for you. It's insurance. We're going to fix your car. You need a new tie rod, you need a new wheel bearing, you need a new this, you need a new tires. Okay, you put your money in, almost like a prepaid lawyer kind of thing, because that's essentially what insurance is anyway.
Tires and maintenance discount card. You know, the automakers start, you know, some of the automakers do that.
But hang on, is it cheaper to do that? Not discount, I'm talking paid. Because you put your money in and you pay it.
Yeah.
Maybe you pay a little deductible, $80 or whatever, and you get four new tires. I could do that. Because I'll tell you what, having four new tires on my car is a lot. I can get top of the line $300 racing slicks or whatever you want to get. I can get those things on my car. That's a lot safer and a lot cheaper. Okay, then having me go, boom, my tire pops, boom, I crash to a family of 12 in their giant monster truck, T-Rex, you know, bulldozer vehicle, and they had to get the idiocracy. Anyway, you know, we sit there and you know, people got to go to the hospital and life insurance has to get, I mean, what's cheaper?
There you go.
Human life or some tires? What's cheaper, to put water or... Yeah, to not, or to worry about paying for these people's kidney transplants. What's cheaper?
Yeah, but see, it's cheaper to not bring them the water, because then you can just blame them for being poor, Albert. Because that's what a right winger like Joe Manchin is really, really good at. And even though he calls himself a Democrat, make no mistake, he's a right winger. You know, this is a guy who goes and this is a guy who goes and sits down every year with the West Virginians for Life. Hey, Albert, I'm at a quarter till. I got a bunch of lit-up lines. I'm going to roll along, and just so folks know, I'm going extra innings.
Awesome. All right, I'll be listening. Absolutely enjoyed it. Fantastic. I'll talk to you later, Bob.
Later, Albert. See ya.
Bye-bye.
I love our conversations, all of our conversations. And, yeah, when I got lights blinking like this and we've gone deep into a conversation, I'm going extra innings. So if you're still there, I'm still there. Let's see. There's a gave up. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, it looks like Christopher Hitchens should not go to Lebanon with Jack Daniels.
And this is why?
Because he got beat up by Lebanese people for ripping up a poster.
Well, Christopher Hitchens, with the exception of his book about God, is rather of an ass, isn't he? I mean, why did he tear up the poster? Did he do it to provoke them?
Because I guess it was someone that he objected politically to. He was a little bit out of his gourd, I guess.
Well, was he on the air when he did it and, like, held it up to the camera and, you know, there, you
no,
dirty
no, no.
so-and-so?
No, he was just walking on. That's the funny thing. He was just walking on the street.
Well, that's just stupid.
I know, but again, you answered your own question just by saying that's stupid. That's Hitchens for you. He's...
Well, half the time I see him, whether it's on Bill Maher or God knows where, he looks like he's half in the bag anyway. So I'm thinking, he travels with that bottle of Jack, or, well, I don't know, he strikes me as a Scotch guy.
I want to thank Senator Russ Feingold for standing up.
Yeah?
Because he stood up against the Afghanistan thing?
Did he? Bless his heart.
You didn't, someone will send it to you. It's on Ross Story. He stood up and he said he wasn't a very wise move, and he measured his words carefully and didn't say Obama was making a miserable choice or any words like that, and he spelled it out of what he thought about it. And to me, again, Bob, this is what's going to happen. It's a bottom line thing. If Obama puts the troops there, and he's lying to us about the reason why they're going to battle, or anyone in his administration, That administration, to me, is automatically war criminals. I don't care if they're Democrats. They're war criminals. And that's the way it has to be. And sometimes we find out painfully that the people that we thought were healthy for us are not so healthy. There are things, though, that I do like about Obama. For one, I recently found out that he likes one of my favorite MCs, which is, you know, it's mind-blowing because it's not somebody well-known. It's somebody who sold, like, I don't know, under platinum and under gold records. His name is Chino XL.
Yeah.
And the quote that he gave, you gotta hear this guy. I mean, I put Chino XL with the greats. You know Saul Williams?
Sure.
Chino
yeah.
XL is right there.
No kidding.
Right there. Amazing. Anyways, apparently this is the story behind it. Chino XL is like the only rapper in America right now who's actually got, for a guest on his album, Barack Obama, for his new album called Reconstruction. Which is such a damn good name because he's Puerto Rican, so it's called Reconstruction. And one of the things that he said was he discovered the reason why I got on the album was kind of weird was that one time Barack Obama was listening to someone's iPod, and he says, "What's that song you're playing?" And the guy told him, he said, "Oh, that's Chino XL. You never heard Chino XL?" "No." And then when he listened to him, this is the kind of effect that Chino XL has on the whole entire world with his lyrics. He goes, "I want to deliver a speech in that sort of eloquent voice." And then Chino XL later found when he was working for Red Entertainment for sports, for the Latin division side for Barack Obama promoting, and he found out and he said, "The only reason you're here is because Barack Obama put you here." And that there's an instance right there that just lights up for me, because anyone that rolls with Chino XL, I mean, all of the greats in the music, in the hip hop industry, listen to Chino XL. And I guess the reason why that's the kind of light I have on Barack Obama when something like that happens, because I can't think of no politician, no leader or anything like that who would do something on that kind of level just because they liked his song. And he wasn't known. And he's not on a major label. So, you know, that those kind of moments right there, it just makes me go, yeah, I can completely understand. And but then there's that thing with the defense side that I don't think he gets. When it comes back to Afghanistan, I just have to say, if he does it, in my mind, it's A, unconstitutional, and B, We're being deceived once again by the Pentagon and the war machine at large. And see, it's immoral.
Yeah, there's that.
And I don't see.
Well, see, our buddy David in Tennessee offered a thought on Obama and Afghanistan, and it does make some sense.
Yeah.
He says Obama's pushing our troop level in Afghanistan so as to push back on the right wing nuts in our government. He thinks, rightly or wrongly, that he can be viewed as a defender of America by pursuing a cause in Afghanistan, but not becoming overly involved there. He's got to avoid deep, deep involvement to keep folks like us on his hook. David says, it's a bloody marketing effort by Obama. I don't fault him for it. I regret that he feels he needs to placate the right to keep some political support from enough of them to stay in office. That while not pushing folks like you and me away. Sigh. And that may be the calculus.
No, I don't think that. I think he really does believe. Here's the other thing too, and we need to remember this. And I would push this on to David as well, as a counterpoint, is the fact that Barack Obama has never been in the military. When you have someone who's not in the military, they don't know the pain and the costs. They see it. They can feel it, but they think they can soothe that, and they think they have the remedy for it. And that's the danger of it. That's why I want
yeah,
someone.
Yeah, but David, George Bush was in the military. He didn't give a rat's rear end about dead soldiers, did he?
Oh, yeah, he was in the military, all right. No, Bob, I think you know what I think you know what I'm saying when I get to, when I'm getting to this.
I know, but I kind of object, David, to the fact that, I mean, I've heard that before, but Ronald Reagan wasn't in the military, and against his own military advisor's advice, i.e., you know, the Marines are billeted there on that troop, on that aircraft carrier out there in the Mediterranean. They're safe. We can put them on a helicopter. We can have them anywhere they need to be in Lebanon in 5 minutes. Mr. President, keep them there.
Well, we need
to put them in the barracks and show the flag, and boom, 200 and some odd the Marines dead.
I guess what I'm saying is Barack Obama doesn't realize, or you won't know it until you're actually in it in that kind of moment. And when you have someone who's not in the military, who hasn't seen the ravages of war up close, this is the danger. And this is why I don't want a leader in charge of a military who doesn't have that side to him. That may be some of my bias showing, but it's common sense, really, when you think about it. And to me, it goes to a bigger issue, which is the fact that we don't have these discussions. We can't have them anywhere except on the horn, on the public airwaves. And it shows to me that we are definitely in a criminal enterprise right now, which is this country. And when you have this kind of level of corruption, I think there's a problem that we can't have these discussions on a wider basis. And the fact is I don't want any more wars unless someone really does tell me the truth. And if they don't tell me the truth, and the fact that people are saying, well, we're going to get out of Iraq, I don't believe that for a second. It's one thing after the other, and it really comes down to the fact that more Americans are going to have to pay attention and realize, no, I don't believe that, and I don't care if he's a Democrat or I don't care if he's a Republican. This seems like it's BS to me. But I don't know. I don't think we have that kind of push that we can do that for any of these conflicts. I think pretty much the military will go where they please, and we'll get like the 20% knuckle draggers of America, and we'll always be dealing with this. And the Democrats will always side with it. Here's the thing about it: the Democrats will constantly side with the war. They'll just find a righteous war. Because here's the other thing about it that I realized in this country.
But the problem with that, David, is the only righteous war is the war of self-defense, if that can be, if you can make that argument.
I know, Bob, but here's the thing about it. I'm coming to the conclusion that the Democrats and Republicans do not want us to be independent, enlightened individuals. They want us to be the sheep to the slaughterhouse, but they're not going to send us to the slaughterhouse. It's just going to be instead of the fireside chat, we're going to have a TV side chat, you know, and that's what we're dealing with in this country. I mean, we're dealing with people who really don't care about us, who are really mostly sociopaths and drugged up individuals and misguided people, either from their family life or from the ravages of their own journeys through their own life. And to me, again, that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with this constant tug and pull, and the sudden realization, when we'll all realize it, that's the thing about it. We'll all realize it on the horn when we have another war conflict, and when it builds up again, and then we'll just say to ourselves, ah, I see what this is about. Because you notice, Bob, they never do say about taking care of the poor. They say taking care of the middle class, taking care of the middle class. Then they find another conflict and they say, oh, well, we got to take care of that. And it's always a distraction to never take care of the poor. And to me, it's a wider issue. And it's the fact that nobody really does care. I've called my congressmen. I've called my congresspeople. I've had the discussions. They're throwing everything away that I'm sending them. And
one, Afghanistan and Iraq are good for business, and you've got a lot of members of Congress who are deeply invested in war profiteering, whether consciously or whether it's a blind portfolio or an active one. The second part of it is that there is a mindset, David.
Yeah.
And you know, for instance, one of the people on this network, Mark Levine, will tell you that Afghanistan was a justified war. I don't think there's anybody else on the network who will say that. But he's there in Washington, D.C., and as I have learned based on just limited contact with the area, that's a different place. That is, I mean, the brains work differently in Washington, D.C. And by differently, I don't mean better. It is a place that is rife with paranoia and fear and terror. I think probably your average Washington, D.C. upper middle class person, and this is not me gooning on Mark, I want you to understand that, but your average middle class Washington, D.C. person is more easily terrified than somebody out here in the hinterland. Because we have a better so that what you get with Afghanistan is, look, the Bush administration, of all the evil they did, one of the evilest that they did the bestest was to convince the American people that the Afghan government, which was at the time the Taliban, was somehow responsible for September 11th, which it wasn't. It just wasn't. It was not strong enough to run out Osama bin Laden, and perhaps philosophically not inclined to do so. But they were not responsible for what happened on the 11th day of September 2001. They're a bunch of little creeps. I mean, anybody that'll blow up a 2,000-year-old statue anybody who hates art, who hates expression, earns mighty low marks in my book. But they weren't responsible for September 11th, but the Bush administration made it clear that they were. So that when we did send the bombers over and we started slaughtering people, whether they be civilians or so, you know, they're all in a missile strike today, killed 26 Pakistanis, including some Al-Qaeda members or some Taliban members. Of course, they always are, aren't they? You know, that's an Al-Qaeda wedding we bomb, or a Taliban the manhood ritual that we drop send missiles into. It's all justified after the fact, and before the fact by virtue of the fact that we have made a conscious decision in this country, David, that Afghanistan needs to be punished because we are the daddy of the world, and that is a typical right wing oriented talking point.
I think it's more than that, Bob. I think they'll find a different conflict around the world anywhere just to keep us us under their thumb.
Oh, perpetual war for perpetual peace, or Orwellian stuff? Nah, you won't get a fight out of me on that.
No. Here's the thing. When you said, and when everyone was saying, it's like when you and Albert and David, when you guys were talking about the wheels coming off, and you wish the Republican Party would go away for good. If we did get rid of that, we would really see the litmus test of that. I believe in the good intentions for unintended consequences theory always, because I think we need necessary a-holes in this country. I'm sorry, but that's the way I feel, and we'll see if the party does go down. I don't want to be calling in saying I knew this would happen. But it's the part where you can't stop. You just have to keep changing things. You just have to keep altering things. And that's the way I see the Democrat Party going if the Republicans do get capsized. I don't see any good coming from it at all.
Well, the Republican Party really, if you sit back and you actually look at what the Republican Party is today, David, it is truly a non-national party. It is a regionalized party of primarily white people. And by primarily, I mean in excess of 99%. It is reactionary. It is geographically located in the South and mostly Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're doing, I understand the point of principled opposition, but they're not that anymore. The Republican Party doesn't have that going for them. The Republican Party is the party of we're not. It's literally the we hope he fails party. It's the word that I've seen. It's the Obama party. Okay, they don't oppose Obama on principle. They oppose things that he puts forward.
for the sake of opposition. You know, there's a headline on one of the major news networks: Republicans question Obama's foreclosure plan. And lo and behold, it's a letter from this creepy little guy from Virginia, Eric Cantor, and John Boehner. And they've got, does your plan compensate banks for bad mortgages they should have never made in the first place? What will your plan do for the over 90% of homeowners who are playing and paying by the rules?
I understand what you're saying, Bob, but, I mean, just as long as another news thing was with the Karl Rove and how the Obama administration is blocking any kind of prosecution from it. See, this is what I'm talking about, this constant good cop, bad cop. People, here's what's going to happen. If the Democrats do reign our country completely over and the Republicans are completely wiped out and there's no more party and they pack it up and leave, we're going to have a police state with the Democrats because that's what they want. Here's why. Because all around this country, they see us as cattle and they want to herd us, and this is their way of how they see society. We know it's that greater good. We know the greater good for you.
Yeah, but see, I can't get on board with that, David, because they're Democrats. This is the typical, you know, herding cats across a parking lot, pushing a wheelbarrow full of frogs kind of thing. We can't Harry Reid can't even get can barely get his own party together. You know, there was Ben Nelson who held his breath till his face turned blue to make sure that students didn't get Pell Grant money in the Senate version of the stimulus package.
What is your opinion on the Obama administration intervening with the Karl Rove project?
Oh, I said last night that it sucks.
You don't have any warning flags go up. You don't think that they don't really want any prosecutions. They don't want anything. Really, accountability, because to have this kind of accountability.
They won't want it until there are 2 million people in the streets in front of the White House and the Capitol demanding it, David.
Yeah,
until polling data reaches 70 to 75% of the American people demanding something about it. But you see, 70-75% of the American people, David, are not plugged into this. They don't flippin' care. They're scared to death about their homes. They're terrified that their jobs are going to go away. What leisure time they have in between two or three or four or five jobs is taken up sitting in front of the television that was way too expensive that they know they shouldn't have bought, but it's the only thing that approaches leisure that they get, and they sit there and they get pablum fed to them from Entertainment Tonight or whatever, or the latest story about the shark that bit the missing white woman.
Well, I think most Democrats like that.
I think most people in power like that. You don't, you know, unless you're somebody. We don't have a full appreciation of what a radical thing it was when FDR, to mention those, you know, you mentioned the fireside chats or YouTube chats or whatever. We don't have an appreciation for what a monumental thing it was when FDR went on the radio and encouraged the American people in that sort of patrician voice that he had. He said, go out and get a copy of the Constitution. Read the Constitution. See what the Constitution means. How many times has that happened between Harry Truman, between FDR and now?
Well, I think there's a bigger reason why that doesn't happen. And a lot of people who say they're for the Constitution aren't for the Constitution when it comes to their party. And that's a problem we have that goes with the Democrats and the Republicans equally, in my opinion. And this is a big problem, and I don't see. And here's the other thing: I don't see our country and our general population smartening up any time regarding these issues. So that leaves us with the fact that things are going to veer in a darker direction for a long time, with Obama or without Obama.
Agreed. This country is in a horrible, horrible mess.
And you know, here's the other thing that I think that is the problem, and I've talked about it, but we really need to stress it. It's we talk too lightly to our citizens, and we lie to them too many times. And we really need to be truthful and say, you know what? The truth is, I don't know how hard you are going to work. I really don't. Some of you might have nervous breakdowns. I mean, because that's what's gonna take. When you just say this lightly and say, we're gonna have to work hard. We're gonna have to work just a little bit harder. It's not getting the message across. And No,
what you're talking about at this point is the Churchill speech where he tells the British people, all I have to offer you is blood, sweat, toil, and tears. That's a hell of a lot of rhetoric. That's rhetoric that's tough for any American to swallow.
I know, but that's what I'm saying, Bob. That's what's going to have to happen. We're going to have to realize that, okay, we've talked about it. We've talked about the issues. Now it comes down to organizing, and guess what? Boy, oh boy, is this going to suck, but here's what we're going to do. And then that comes back to this question. Are we going to have to be forceful in that issue, in that regard? And guess what? I think we are going to have to be forceful. And that's what I mean by, I don't think we can have a democracy for a time right now with the current population that we have. That's why some people are...
Well, and I guess that's fortunate because we don't have one.
Exactly, but I mean...
I mean, the brutal tough talk is out there. For instance, on Afghanistan,
yeah.
General David McKernan today said that... The 17,000 extra soldiers, funny, yesterday it was 12, today it's 17,000, that are being shipped off to Afghanistan. He said, this is a quote, even with these additional forces, I have to tell you that 2009 is going to be a tough year, and that they're going to be there for as long as 5 years.
5 years.
So, of course, Barack Obama has just bought his way out of having to deal with Afghanistan in his first term as presidency, so that now he can kind of say, okay, that's dealt with. Next problem.
I see this as the eternal distraction. Force another military brigade into another foreign country, and then say, oh, no, we can't do what you guys wanted to do. I'm sorry.
Oh, yes, we can't afford it. War's too expensive.
Yeah, and then that brings one last point before I go, because I know you have to go get out of here. But I wanted to ask you about your fourth court meeting that you had last night. I don't know if you.
It was just the group meeting of. Mm-hmm. I mean, we discussed the Fourth Circuit decision. It was our local group meeting, and I love the people dearly.
What is the consensus of the public of your town? Do they want the coal companies to leave? What kind of percentage are we looking at?
Well, the biggest problem we have now outside the town, the biggest problem we have is getting people to know what the coal companies are doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because when people think of this little town where I live, they think of, you know, the beating heart and soul of the whitewater rafting industry. This little town on this side of the river and Fayetteville on the other side of the river. They kind of bookend the tourism industry in this area. So that's what people think of, and we have the job of getting those folks. And actually, I'm working on trying to increase some awareness and increase some knowledge. The out-of-state people, we're working on getting them to understand what's being done here. Now, within the town itself, and I think that might have been your question, David, there's the usual split. Because, this town, Anstead, is named after the geologist who discovered the coal seams that led to the mining here.
Mm-hmm.
And the very existence of the town is wrapped up in coal. So that a lot of people say, well, you know, coal's West Virginia, West Virginia's coal. But more and more, as more houses shake, as more coal trucks rumble through the town, you know, the last time we had a coal boom here, we had a railroad. And they went on the train, and the coal went on into the cars on the train, and the train went down the tracks. And you didn't have monster killer coal trucks running your kid's school bus off the road. So you're gonna have that pushback in the form of people saying, you know, oh, these people we gotta have our jobs. Mostly, though, they don't live in this community.
Man, free will is such a bitch regarding those issues. Because the lazy way out is to just say, well, I got my power on, and the coal company provides
it. Well, that's something that the coal companies pull like a little red wagon. You know, well, your power was out for 6 hours the other night. Guess you're glad that coal got the power back on, aren't you? You know, my response to that is, look at this. Coal can't even keep the lights on in a high wind.
I don't see any other way out of it except being getting forcible legislation that's going to scare the bejesus off these coal companies. But it has to happen because I just don't see free will rising up for you and saying, all right, everybody, let's get all the coal companies out. I'm with you now.
The coal companies may do it to themselves. There was a Pittsburgh Post-Gazette article that I read earlier today, David. Mm-hmm. Mine companies are cutting coal jobs left and right. Consol just put its Mine 84 in Washington, PA, on long-term idle status, 275 people more or less out of work for the foreseeable future. In West Virginia, a northern West Virginia mine run by Consol, two daily shifts instead of three, 2009 production target of 3.1 million tons for the mine instead of the 4 to 4.2 million that it's capable of. And Consol owns the company that's doing the mountain job, the job on the mountain here near my hometown. And the funny thing is, though, I haven't heard of any cutbacks on that because the beauty, as they see it, of mountain removal mining is that it takes almost nobody to do it. You can take down an entire mountain with 12 people. Dump truck driver, drill operator, explosives packer, bulldozer operator, boom, done. And as long as the state... See, there are regulations in place that would stop that thing going on up there. Since 2001, one of those permits up there has over 3,000 violations, any one of which would be enough to shut it down, but the DEP is under orders not to.
Now, how much of your electricity in your house comes from the coal companies? A lot?
Well, to talk in terms of West Virginia, probably in excess of 90% of West Virginia's electricity is coal-fired. And that's because state government has not moved in any way, shape, form, or fashion to encourage the development of alternative energy sources. Customers, just this year, customers of the power company here, which has a monopoly, were finally given the alternative of paying a little bit extra to buy wind power, to buy green energy, which they in turn buy from a wind farm in Illinois. Dig it, you know, Illinois. When we've got adequate wind here to generate our own wind power. But, so, you know, we pay a little extra so that we've got green energy.
So do you see any momentum in the near future for green energy? Is there any doorways that you see on the
There's
horizon?
Tons of momentum. I mean, based on what I saw at that conference last week, there's tons of momentum for green energy in this country. The one thing, however, is that it seems that most of the people who are most wrapped up in the green energy revolution just figure that it's okay to go and let Appalachia die from coal poisoning. And that, you know, they'll start the green energy revolution somewhere else. And that's one of those that just makes me want to just grab them by the shirt placket and say, you can't green any part of the United States until you green Appalachia and help us get off coal. Because until you do, everything else is tinged with soot and coal toxins wherever you do it in the rest of the country. It has to, the green energy revolution has to start here. And that's a matter of not just talking to government, but to talking to the people who are advocating for the green energy. You know, the Coal River Wind Project is the most brilliant, popularly supported, people-based, people-moved, people-invented energy program in the United States right now.
Right.
And yet even the well-intended people who put out the so-called reality campaign that talks about how coal can never be clean, they give you all the technical reasons for why coal can never be clean, David, but they never get around to the fact that they never get around to talking about the fact that coal can't be clean because of how we get coal. And that's frustrating to no end.
It seems to me like you have to market West Virginia to the people around the world in the similar way of how they did with Australia and that burnt koala, or recently I was seeing something on Dig about physically abused cats, and they got a serious a viral response to it, and they got the kids arrested who did it on YouTube and stuff. I don't know. There has to be a way where you can emotionally trigger that button, the same response. It's one of the most difficult, challenging things, though, because someone will cry over a wounded cat or a bruised cat or a bruised dog.
Or worry about the bats and birds on a wind farm.
right. But when they see a kid covered in coal ash or something to that degree, I don't know if it may warrant the same response, but from my experience, I'm seeing more people go completely psycho over a singed animal or to that degree. So I mean, I don't know. There has to be a way where you can trigger that emotional response.
Well, and you know, I'm more plugged into a lot of what's going on than most probably are. And I can tell you that message and that argument is constantly growing and constantly evolving.
Right.
I could do a 3-hour program and line up all the guests, and we'd need 6 hours to do it for all the ways that people are trying to change the nature of the debate. We will be gone a week from tomorrow back to D.C., this time the whole fam, Damily and I, for something called Power Shift. And it's exciting as it can be. I believe the website is powershift09.org. And it's absolutely brilliant. It is youth-oriented. It's aimed at young people. They're expecting 10 to 12,000 young folks. Agnes and my kids may very well be among the youngest activists there. And I'm excited about it. There's going to be really cool entertainment on Saturday night. In fact, I was going to tell you who it was, but I couldn't find the email. You'd recognize the name.
Where is it going to be held?
D.C. Okay. Yeah. That's one way of doing it, because you start by educating young people, and the young people go out and educate more. In fact, I'll go ahead and say right now, David, since you kind of opened the door for me, I've sent an email to the communications people for Power Shift, and I hope they take me up on the offer, because, you know, we've discussed on the program in the past how important it is. You want all the people at the physical meeting that you can get there, but you also have to acknowledge that there are a lot of people who can't be and would like to be. And for those people, I have made an offer to take the proceedings and, you know, not so much me doing a show, but just take the proceedings and get them out on the Internet for those who couldn't get there but want to feel like they are part of this growing movement.
I guess the next obvious step is there's going to have to be a precocious film director with some kind of deal from Sundance or Magnolia Films. Is there any talk that you hear around there that's very likely to happen in a documentary like that? Because you have the documentary on steroids.
Oh, there are documentaries in production right now. There's one called On Coal River that's absolutely brilliant. There are two or three documentary filmmakers who are shooting at any given time that we've got an event. There were people shooting. There were people shooting at this meeting last week. But the problem is all these people operate. Well, let me give you an example.
Yeah.
In the chat room right now is a very dear friend of the show. Parson Brown is in there. He's part of the Topless America Project.
Okay.
All right. He operates out of Chicago, and the Topless America Project operates out of Chicago. The Topless America Project is an extremely grassroots, organic sort of project that was born out of a gut resistance to the evil that is mountain removal. And the Topless America Project was literally born out of change donations in empty pickle jars. Okay? Now, they're doing brilliant work, but they have to do it in fits and starts because of the way that they have to raise money.
Right.
Once again, we're dealing with the issue of liberals trying to do good things for the planet
who have to continue to climb uphill with one foot in the bucket because we don't have the infrastructure that David from Tennessee and I were talking about. You know, we don't have our Heritage Foundations. We don't have our Competitive Enterprise Institute, American Enterprise Institute, United States Chamber of Commerce, yada, 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 who are willing to sit there, take the losses, pour out the money, and make sure that the message gets out. Liberals haven't figured out how to do that yet, David. And so our buddies, Parson Brown et al., from the Topless America Project, are hoping to get to PowerShift, or rather to the annual, I'm sorry, not PowerShift, but the annual Mountaintop Removal Lobby Week in D.C., which is in mid-March. My bad. Not PowerShift, Mountaintop Removal Lobby Week. And they're trying to raise funds to do it. And what they're talking about is raising funds to fuel them, gas, from Chicago to D.C., and buy them videotapes that they can shoot with and keep their work going. And just to go ahead and get the information in, if anybody wants to drop them a check or anything, it can be sent to Columbia College. You can make the check payable to Columbia College. In the memo, put Topless America, and mail it to 1107 West Grace Street, number 3, Chicago, Illinois, 60613. You know, and that's the thing. It's as worthy can be. If we had adequate funding here, I wouldn't be doing this pitch right now. I'd just be writing Parson a check.
I hear what you're saying.
Because I want the work done.
Someone like Ashley Judd, could she be seen as a seed investor for any of these films, or is that not a possibility?
Sure, she could be seen that way if she was willing to take that step forward. I know she has been a spokesman involved with one film called The Appalachians. You know, she spoke out very strongly in Kentucky. I'm trying to find out who her contact people are so that I can try to get her on the show. I mentioned Woody Harrelson the other night. He's out there trying to, he's got a very good letter that attempts to help raise funds for this movie called On Coal River. If you go to, if you just search that film, you'll find the trailer and it'll move you beyond your ability to describe it. But once in a while, what we run up against is that all these individuals, you know, you want to go to somebody for a funding partner, so some individual to pump money into things. What we don't, it's an infrastructure issue. It's the literal equivalent, David, of bridges and roads and sewer systems and sidewalks and water projects. It's that in the liberal world. Now, for all that an insane freak like Bill O'Reilly babbles on about George Soros, he's rich, but he's only so rich. There's no unbiased clearinghouse that isn't all elbowy and touchy-feely and footsie under the card table, and, you know, you got to have the right name or know the right person before you can get in the door, that maintains and nurtures liberal outfits. You know, I'm sick to death of watching... not just in radio, but in other forms of the arts, in other forms of public outreach. I'm sick to death of watching people just break themselves on the rocks of the inability or unwillingness of the people who have the funds to support what's going on because, you know, you don't know the right person. I remember a Washington Post article. I'm sorry, I'm not soliloquizing here, or I am, but I don't mean to. There was a Washington Post article a couple of years ago about a group of a whole bunch of rich liberals who had gotten together and they were going to fund liberal projects. And when they were asked, David, you know, well, how can people who have those projects reach you to, you know, let you know their stuff is worthy? You know what they say? You know what this newspaper article said? We're not giving out our contact information. If your project's worthy, we'll find you. Like it was some sort of freaking A-team and these people were George Peppard and Mr. T. God, that pisses me off.
Speaking of Mr. T, we'll end it on this note. I can't believe, of all the movies that Ridley Scott is picking, he's actually picking to remake The A-Team. Good Lord.
You know, of all the things I've heard tonight, that's probably the thing I didn't need to hear the most.
I know.
I'm going to make you hang up over that one, David.
Well, you know, I just wanted to. I guess all I can say on the issue of the Cole situation is. It seems like you guys are running out of time for your town. And I don't know exactly what the remedy for that is, but I guess we'll just have to continue talking about it as much as we can. I don't know if you know, but there's another video. I'm probably going to post it on the board on Mountain Justice. She just put up another video regarding, I guess, the news report from West Virginia. It's nothing really particularly interesting, but, you know, it's just something else they added to their YouTube channel.
Cool. Okay. Well, I will talk to you soon, David. I appreciate I appreciate all the conversation. It's always a pleasure.
I hope you have a great time at your convention. What is it, next week?
Yeah, next week. And hopefully we'll be doing some broadcasting. One never knows.
I hear you.
All right. Take care, David.
Later.
Bye now. Pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine. Let's see if you guys have hung on. Nope. And no. Well, what a rousing evening of conversation we have had. And I want to close this evening with one last outrage, if you will. This godforsaken political cartoon. I never cease to be amazed at the degree to which the right wing gets away with its eliminationist rhetoric. I don't know if you've seen this thing yet. I assume you have. This thing that ran in the New York Post today. Rupert Murdoch paper, of course. An editorial cartoon that shows a couple of cops having just hole-punched a chimpanzee, you know, in line with the story of the chimp being taken down in the last couple of days for attacking a woman. And the speech balloon says, I guess they'll have to find someone else to write the next stimulus bill. Jesus and his brother Harry. Our buddy Brandon wrote in from Brooklyn. Can you believe this crap? And sent along the cartoon. Says, now I like political cartoons. I like political satire. I get black comedy, i.e. humor surrounding morbid subject matter. But this is overt racism and an insult to both President Obama and African American people everywhere, of which I am one. Brandon says, I'm actually just like President Obama because I too am a biracial American. As President Obama said during his acceptance speech at the 2008 Democratic National Convention in Denver, enough! After looking at this cartoon, I would think that any African American cannot help but come to the same conclusion I did, that based on what the police officer is saying, the dead monkey represents President Barack Obama, even though the fact is the Congress authored the stimulus bill, not President Obama. That might be the artist's pathetic excuse when he's called to explain this racist piece of trash he's drawn. But nonetheless, this goes way beyond disrespectful. It is both heartless and displays one's desire to see the president harmed. You have never seen a liberal or progressive advocate violence towards a Republican president. The Dixie Chicks are saints for their criticism of former President Bush compared to what the New York Post has done today. Why did the New York Post decide to run this cartoon? As a matter of principle, I swore that I would never buy another New York Post because of their partisan views. Now I'm wondering how we can flat out bring down the New York Post altogether. Mr. Murdoch should be held accountable for this atrocity. I understand free speech, political discord, and honest-to-God ideological debate, but this is hate speech in its worst form, and there should be real consequences for what the New York Post has done today. The ultimate fantasy is to see Rupert Murdoch begging the forgiveness of all Americans for this racist, hateful, death fantasy cartoon. Absolutely disgusting. Please pass the cartoon along to any news entity, blog, political website, or friend whom you think will be able to carry the message. Perhaps when I get home, it may be the lead news story for the evening. My wife plans to call into your show tonight to talk about it. Rats. I hate missing out on calls. Unbelievably disgusted. Signed, Brandon. As am I. And when last I checked, and this is a really revolting part of the process, when last I checked, the New York Post was still defending the cartoon. New York Post editor-in-chief Carl Allen said, "The cartoon is a clear parody of a current news event, to wit, the shooting of a violent chimpanzee in Connecticut. It broadly mocks Washington's effort to revive the economy. Again, Al Sharpton reveals himself as nothing more than a publicity opportunist." Well, that letter I just read you wasn't from Al Sharpton. And I'm not Al Sharpton. I didn't know Al Sharpton had said anything about it. But when you've got a post, when you've got an editorial cartoon, which is, of course, on the opinion pages, not on the comics pages, not on the funny pages, not on the don't take it seriously pages. When you've got something posted like that cartoon on your op-ed page, and it engages in the typical right-wing eliminationist rhetoric for which they are so well noted, and what's more, it involves uniformed officers of the law taking down that metaphor for President Barack Obama, what are we left to say? Now, here's what Al Sharpton said, because editor-in-chief of the Post, Carl Allen, thinks it's nothing just but publicity opportunism. "The cartoon in today's New York Post is troubling at best given the historic racist attacks of African Americans as being synonymous with monkeys. One has to question whether the cartoonist is making a less than casual reference to this when the cartoon they have police saying after shooting a chimpanzee that now they will have to find someone else to write the stimulus bill. Being that the stimulus bill has been the first legislative victory of President Barack Obama and has become synonymous with him, it is not a reach to wonder, are they inferring that a monkey wrote the last bill?" Well, that's not an inference. That's what the damn cartoon says. They'll have to find someone else to write the next stimulus bill. That is not an inference. That is a clear statement that the dead chimpanzee against laying on the ground in a pool of blood with bullet holes through his abdomen and the rictus of death stretched across his the primate face is the author of the stimulus bill. There's no way to get around it. This is pure and simple right-wing eliminationism. Start using that phrase. Not that I'm telling you to do anything, but start using it. I learned that phrase, and I've hung on to it like grim death. It is perfect. Eliminationism. The desire that foments in the stinking bowels of right-wingers to eliminate, to destroy, to kill, to silence anyone and anything with whom they disagree. Take ownership of that word and make them start eating it. Sean Delonis is the artist. Because you see, try it this way. Take a piece of paper and cover up the dialogue bubble in the cartoon so that it's just two cops having just shot down a chimpanzee. Under that circumstance, it is, in fact, a referent to the shooting of the chimpanzee in Connecticut. Because that's all you've got. A cop, another cop with a gun, a sidewalk, and a dead great ape. Now, pull away the piece of paper. See the dialogue bubble. They'll have to find someone else to write the next stimulus bill. There is no way in which the dead chimpanzee doesn't relate to the stimulus bill reference. Frankly, that's criminal conduct. And you know how I feel about the First Amendment. That is criminal conduct. That is open, widely circulated, violent advocacy and frankly, it rises almost, when you consider the nature of violent right-wingers, when you consider a nation that recently had the confession of Jim David Adgison published that referred to liberals as vipers and spiders and snakes and openly advocated the killing of them. When you consider a freak like Hal Turner, a not infrequent guest of Sean Hannity on his little eliminationist program, who's out there talking about going out and killing liberals. When you take the entire presidential campaign into context and think about the guys who were arrested in Denver, the skinheads, remember? Or the white power types who were arrested in Tennessee and Arkansas who wanted to take out some specific white supremacist number of African-American students, it becomes a very, very, very disturbing question of context. And while I'm not, by any stretch of the imagination, an authoritarian, Mr. Delonis should be compelled to either leave his job or issue a complete, unabashed apology and clear statement that he in no wise ever advocates violence against President Barack Obama. Because the every bit of imagery that he put forward is straight out of the worst of the imagery generated by right-wing hate groups from the Klan to the Aryan Nation to the Aryan Brotherhood to the true soldiers of white Christ, whatever. And it is pure, unmitigated incitement. And it is not within the realm of what we understand to be free speech in this country. It is not acceptable. So that's where we close the program this evening. 41 minutes of extra innings. I thank you for your time. I thank you for your patience. I wish I had gotten to all the telephone calls. Brandon, if you're still tuned in, I'm sorry I didn't get to talk to your lovely wife. Perhaps another evening. I hope. Thanks for your calls, your thoughts, your participation in the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. Thanks for your kind contributions. Thanks to those of you who have stepped up this month. Those of you who have made your monthly contributions or made a new contribution, we are profoundly appreciative. I wish sincerely that there were more of you. We are at the 18th of February. There are 10 days in February left, and, well, the fact is we're not even within seeing distance of 1,000, let alone the 2,000 that we try to raise every month to keep this operation going. We just aren't. If you have some means of contributing, it would be greatly appreciated. But if you do not, we certainly understand, and we will go forward as long as we can. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, to Peter Godbold, our IT professional. Thanks to Ben Birch, who is, if there is one person who is a hero of liberal talk, it is Ben Birch and what he has done to keep the idea of it alive since 2002 at whiterosesociety.org. through all of the shifting and change and the machinations and the back and the forth and the inability of liberals to keep their act together broadcast-wise, Ben Birch has been as constant as the pole star at WhiteRoseSociety.org. And he deserves your thanks and he deserves your support. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, coalriverwind.org, sponsor of all the programming on the Horn. It is their sponsorship combined with your contributions that keep the Horn going. They are, in fact, the bravest, hardest working people I know. And I don't say that as a slogan. I say that as a compliment and an acknowledgement of hard work done in the face of almost intolerable circumstances. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.